Enter. If you dare.
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for the discussion of horror, film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I'm one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the U.S. of A., and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how are you?
Well, I'll tell you, Phil, today at work, we had a chili cook-off. So for lunch, I consumed 5 different types of chili. So now, all I need to do is eat some kale, and I can make my own green inferno.
And I hope your cats aren't around, because those poor bastards must be in pain.
Right.
Very well. And in the state of New York.
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how's it going?
All right. How are you doing, Phil?
I'm doing all right. And in the state of Connecticut.
Hi, this is Christy Peterson Schoonover.
Hey, Christy, how are you?
I'm good. Drank too much at the cemetery last night, but other than that, I'm good.
You know, that's not a sentence you hear very often.
But more often than you'd think.
If you hang around me, you hear it more often than you'd probably like, but yeah.
And Abe won't be joining us because he has a prior commitment, so he is unable to attend. But first off, before we get into some Halloween stuff, Eric, you do another podcast with your buddy Dan?
I do. It's a general interest podcast called the Askancity Podcast. That's spelled Askancity. You can find it on Stitcher and at the iTunes store.
Excellent. And Mike, you do a genre blog?
It's Unnatural Selections, www.unnaturalselections.com.
Very good. And Chrissy, you have some items that you do. You have your own website and such?
Yep. I'm a short dark fiction writer, and you can find out about me and read some stuff linked to magazines, et cetera, at ChristyPetersonSchoonover.com.
Excellent. And
by which you mean your fiction is short and dark, not you yourself. Or
I was trying not to make a smart-ass comment about that.
Okay, well, like I said, I'm a little off today, so it may be open season for all of you tonight.
Not a big deal. It is Halloween, so for me, who cares about me? But this podcast is darkdiscussions.com, www.darkdiscussions.com. And the right on the front page of that website are links to all the things we just discussed, as well as a few other things like Abe's blog and
a realer movie reviewer. That's
right.
R-E-E-L.
E-R. Movie reviewer. You can find it through Google, or you can just go to www.darkdiscussions.com. And there's a couple other links to various other friends of the podcast. And at the bottom of every page of darkdiscussions.com are links to our Facebook group, Dark Discussions Podcast, our email, darkdiscussions@aol.com, our Twitter, darkdiscussion1, our RSS feed, our link to our podcast on Stitcher, among other things. And on the website itself are all the podcasts where you can download them if you like. And they are all listed on one page as well as on their own individual pages. Yes, Mike, you're going to
say. Phil, don't you have, or do you have, since Christy has mentioned that she's a short dark fiction writer. Don't you have stories that you've written, and don't you have either something that's just coming out or just came out?
Actually, I did get a new story accepted to a horror anthology. Unfortunately, I forget the name of it at the moment. Pretty bad. Yes.
Found wherever your finer books are sold.
Yes. I'll get the name of it and be prepared for an upcoming episode, but it isn't coming out until next year anyway. And it is basically horror related to technology, like phone technology, basically.
Nice.
Yes. So my story is basically about, a strange caller in the night who wants to visit, and that individual appears and
they're calling from in the house.
Well, not like that, but it's more of a supernatural rather than just an individual. So a serial killer or something. Yeah. So, but yes. Thanks for bringing that up, Mike. I do also have a couple other short stories in various anthologies. Carol Mad 2, Bugs, Tales That Slither, Creep and Crawl, which Christy Peterson Schoonover as well has a story in that. And Canopic Jaws, Tales of Mummies and Mummifications. And again, Christy also has a story in that one, too. So, yes, a couple of stories or a handful of stories are out there, are available on Amazon.
Now, and you either have a charm bracelet or Lily saying hello.
That is Lily walking around looking for bones. She has her raw hides hidden. She hides them, and then she pulls them out when she wants them. So today is October 22nd. This will be an episode released couple days before Halloween. So happy Halloween, everybody. At the last minute, I threw a thing out to everybody on the podcast to list 10 horror films in the past, since like 2005, in the past 10 years, that aren't big name horror films, but are really good ones that folks may be interested in watching during the Halloween months. We can get to that in a moment, but before we do, anybody see the big news, the Star Trek trailer, or Star Wars trailer, I should say?
Yeah.
Okay.
Kind of hard not to.
I'm just tired. I have of not. The hype. That's, I don't even want to see the movie anymore. I'm just done with the hype.
Yes.
I'm just getting started with the hype.
A friend of mine actually emailed me or texted me yesterday saying, Phil bought 2 tickets for opening night. We're there.
And, say, okay. And then you email him back and say, you're a huge nerd.
I was thinking that, but no, I said, I'm there. That's all
I
said.
I have to be polite. I know someone who turned down a chance to go to an early screening because they think it's going to be stupid.
Huh. Well, now that's a little weird.
Our local AMC theater here is doing a 24-hour lead-up where, like, at midnight the night before, they're starting with The Phantom Menace, and they're going to play the prior 6 films. I guess it's up until the evening of the next day.
So it starts showing up at 12 in the afternoon.
Pretty much.
When they switch over to the good movies.
Yeah, I think it's like they're going to do the first 3 episodes, 1, 2, and 3, which of course is by itself is probably what, about 8 hours. And then they're going to show Star Wars, mm-hmm. The Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. And then I think it's either 6 or 7 o'clock that night. They're showing, the new one. So, I don't know. I saw that and thought, wow, that's a neat idea, but I don't know if I really want to go stay up all night, and I don't know if I could do that. But I can guarantee you it's not going to be very packed around here at all.
Yeah,
like,
well,
you could probably bring your sleeping bags because there's probably going to be like 5 people in there. But yeah.
Right, the pre-sales crashed Fandango, supposedly.
For the new movie.
Right.
That doesn't surprise me one bit.
No, but it's if there's any sign that I'm getting close to maybe finally actually acting like an adult, it's, you know, that I no longer really feel the need to run out and catch a movie, even Star Wars, on like opening night or necessarily opening weekend.
Yeah, avoiding spoilers is going to be a bitch, though.
Yeah, but I'm sure I will see it soon enough. And it helps that I know, like, Pam does not like crowds, so she doesn't like going to see most shows on, like, a Friday evening. She'd rather catch a matinee sometime.
Well,
the hard part for me is just going to find time with her to go catch the movie.
My whole thing is that my father took me to see the original Star Wars in the theater when I was 3 years old. It was the first movie I ever went to. And I'm going to visit him at Christmas. And part of me really would like to go see this Star Wars movie with my dad, since he got me started on the whole thing. But the other part of me really doesn't want to put him through the trouble of trying to acquire tickets and get us there.
That'll be 3 weeks later, so it shouldn't be that bad.
Now, is it actually – I am not following this closely. Is it actually released?
December 17th or something?
I thought it was the 6th.
Maybe it is, yeah. Maybe.
Okay, because all the trailers in the theater say Christmas.
Hmm, interesting. Well, let me see. My friend here.
If only there was a way to find the release date.
Well,
if only we had some type of technology.
All right, this is what my friend wrote. He goes, okay, I've bought 2 tickets for opening night.
Oh, yeah, maybe it's December 18th.
17th.
Okay, I thought it was earlier than that for some reason.
And yeah. I'm a huge Star Wars geek, but honestly, I'm just going to wait until it's convenient for me to go. Mm-hmm. I just really don't feel it's like so much hype and so much this and so much that. And quite frankly, nothing in my mind is ever going to match the first three. So whatever. Like, you know,
it's just, well, just, you know,
you know,
the, you could, I think you can match the third one.
I don't know about that. The third one was still pretty good.
The third one was still pretty good, but there was still a lot of puppets in it. So
I trust.
But
I still. JJ.
But my point is like I grew up. I watched particularly Empire Strikes Back over and over and over again. I've seen the first three movies. Many, many, many times in my life, and I never get tired of them. The first three, I saw each one of them once and went, all right, if I die and I don't have to see that again, it's fine. You know what I mean? But Jurassic World, I've watched a bunch of times again already. So that had an appeal to me, but you know what I'm saying? I don't know. I kind of judge the geek movies on the level of how many times am I going to watch them over and over and over again or just leave them on. You know, all the time, like in the background. That to me is the mark of something I really enjoy. When it's done and I want to start over, awesome. If I leave a theater going, that was okay, maybe I'll see it once again, but if I don't, I'm not going to die, then it really wasn't that good.
Well, for me, it really is, and I have no problem at all recognizing many of the issues and the flaws in the Star Wars prequels. But there's just something about And really, it's some of it's the sound design of just being immersed in that world again. That even when it's crappy Star Wars, it's still Star Wars to me. They're in the middle of the second season of the Star Wars Rebels cartoon on. It's one of the Disney channels, and they just did an episode that was basically a Jaws homage, or had a lot of Jaws homage elements in it, which was kind of neat. But some of it's just, you know, sitting in a theater and hearing a lightsaber flare up, or you know, a TIE fighter screaming by, you know, just transports me right back to being 7 years old again.
Again, this is just for specific individuals. I can see your point, but again, this is depends on if you like the franchise or not. Obviously,
well, that's talking clearly about me.
Understand. All right, let's move on.
However, really want to run out to the theater tonight and see Paranormal Activity 5, and instead I'm sitting here with you guys, so.
Is that released?
Six.
Tonight.
Well,
the
Ghost Dimension.
Dimension. It's officially tomorrow, but.
To cheat and put them out on Thursday night.
Yeah, it's cheap.
I was going to go tonight if I weren't here, but.
Damn, I'm going to check.
We're better, reviews. Christy.
Yeah.
Huh?
We're better.
I know, but it's the Ghost Dimension. It's going to be terrible. Tomorrow. It's going to be more bad found footage schlock. How could I possibly pass that up?
I don't know. I have trouble passing up myself.
Well, and you also have Witch Hunter opening up this weekend, too. So
yeah, that one's getting bad reviews. I know. I don't know.
Witch Hunter, I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, it doesn't mean anything in some cases, but in a lot of cases it does.
It doesn't mean anything ever.
No. Certain reviewers I trust.
What about what was that Mike Myers movie? The Love Guru or something like that. That one was pretty well hated by the critics.
And I assume it was bad. I don't know.
I don't know. I never watched it because I trust the critics.
So bad example of none of us have seen this.
All right. So let's move on. Let's just throw out a few things we've seen and make that quick so we can get into our Halloween list that we wanted to discuss. But some films like The Martian and Crimson Peak will probably do reviews on our episodes on, so we don't have to talk too much about those. But anything you wanted to bring up, Eric?
Well, I did see Crimson Peak, and all I'll say is that I enjoyed it and recommend people catch it in the theater. But just don't expect a really scary movie. It's more, I think Mike used the term gothic horror.
Gothic romance.
So it's much more about...
I think Del Toro has used that term. I've seen a number of places use it.
More about the mood and the atmosphere than being scared. So if you go in with that expectation, it's a really well-made movie. So I'll just leave that as my commentary on it for tonight.
So the trailer is lying.
Yes.
Trailers always lie. You know this.
That's true.
Yeah, like Han Solo is not at all in the new Star Wars movie.
So, anything else, Eric?
I also watched. What was I? Oh, you know what? It's another thing we're probably going to do an episode on. I watched the movie Circle on Netflix, and I enjoyed that. And I think we're going to Phil and I at least are interested in doing an episode. We'll see if we can get everybody else on board.
And who recommended that to you? Or?
You did, Phil.
Yes, yes, I did. I must get credit.
They're there, Phil. Well,
as long as you insist on giving it to you, then yes, I guess you must.
Me. Anything else, Eric?
Did I mention Cooties last time?
Yes.
Yes, you do.
Okay. Then no, nothing else.
All right. For me, I saw Circle as well, and it's a science fiction horror film. It's very, very good. High recommend. Eric liked it as well, and he thought it would be worth doing an episode, so I recommend that you, Mike, and you, Christy, check it out, because I think both of you would like the film a lot. There's a little heavy-handedness to certain pieces, but all in all, it's still a very good film, a very good horror sci-fi film. Mm-hmm. I saw The Diabolical, terrible name for a film because it's so generic sounding, but it stars Ali Larder, and it's a really good horror film. I think, Christy, you would like it a lot because it appears to be a ghost story, but there's a big twist at the end, and the twist is actually pretty good. I thought it was a really good episode a really good movie, potentially an episode type movie. So all you folks, they want to check it out. It was just released on VOD this week, and it's called The Diabolical, a pretty good horror film. And then I saw the same film you saw, Mike, Tales of Halloween, and it was pretty good. It was good. I could see it actually being a fun rewatch, but it's definitely not as good as I had hoped. As we know, a lot of these anthology horror films, if they do not have strict rules, then you're going to have a mixed mash of comedy and horror and gore and stupid fart joke type. You know, so if the problem is the producer probably should have said, I only want straight horror, period. That's it. And then I think the film, you know, all those type of film anthologies occurred. So it unfortunately has a little much of like the ABCs of Death, where it doesn't feel like it's a full mishmash. It doesn't match. It doesn't. I don't know, right. You can explain it better than I've already been, Mike. I also watched the latest episode of The Walking Dead, and that was one of the probably the best episodes of this whole series. A lot of people saying this. I assume you may have seen it too, Mike. You can let us know your opinion. And I'm still watching The Blind Spot, which is a really good thriller genre television show. I recommend. And then I have to say The Leftovers season 2 is arguably my favorite show since The Game of Thrones. Season 2 has been really good of The Leftovers. I recommend as well. Mike.
So I've seen what you guys have seen. I didn't see The Circle yet. I want to thank Phil for buying it on iTunes so they could put it up on Netflix, so I'll now be able to watch it for free.
Indeed.
Yeah. Fortunately, it was only $4.99, but you're right. It was on Netflix. I didn't even know it was there.
Yeah. I did see Crimson Peak, and it's an R-rated original horror film in theaters that made $15 million, so and cost $40 million to produce. So for all the horror fans who want to know why they can't have nice things, this is the reason why.
But you know what? I can't say the film looked like a horror film that I would like, for example. It looked, like you said, too gothic-y and too surreal versus a type of horror film I would like. So I guess it's a niche film rather than just a horror film that everybody wants to go see.
Well, I think it's somebody pointed out that this is basically the same amount of money that The Woman in Black 2 made opening in January with probably a tenth of the ad budget. you know, there is a reason when everyone complains, why do we get so many found footage movies? Why do we get so many cheap movies? Why do we get so many remakes? Well, those make money. And Crimson Peak probably won't. I mean, we'll see what happens overseas. There are certainly issues with the marketing and other stuff, and you could question, you know, how much Del Toro sensibilities line up with American audiences. Nevertheless, you know, it's either the horror community is not getting behind Project, just in principle, or it's just not a big enough audience on their own to really drive box office success beyond, you know, these small niche films, these, you know, $1 to $5 million budget movies. So, you know, say what we will about Green Inferno, since we'll bring that up for a third week in a row, that made its money back for its investors, and Crimson Peak probably won't, unless it does really well overseas. So, I enjoyed it. If it comes up as a future episode, then we'll discuss it more in detail then. Otherwise, I'm sure it'll come up somewhere along the lines. And then it was Tales of Halloween, which, you know, made me wish that there really was a better Halloween-themed anthology film out there. Neil Marshall was one of the producers behind the film. Actually, his wife, I think, was one of the first people involved in it. She directed one of the segments. He directs the last segment, which was the pumpkin episode, which was sort of a Carpenter homage. But this very definitely leans as a whole, because there's 10 segments in 90 minutes, so they're about 8 to 9 minutes each. So they're somewhere between the ABCs of Death, which are like 4 to 6 minutes, and VHS, which were usually 15 to 20 minutes. So the segment's somewhere in between on length, and I didn't necessarily feel that many of them needed to go any longer than they did. So I think the lengths worked for the stories they had. I don't know that there's any stories I outright disliked, but I don't know that there's anything that really had me going, oh, that was an awesome segment. There were some I liked more or less. I really liked the Lucky McKee segment. I think that was the one you liked the most.
Yeah, that was.
As I mentioned, Facebook, it's the most stylized segment, right? It's in terms of, you know, in terms of visuals and in terms of the editing, it's the most distinct. It has the most boob shots.
No nudity.
No nudity, but, you know, you get some good close-ups of the rack. And it's interesting. It's an interesting one, because if you know Lucky McKee's film history, he tends to have a, like May or the women, he tends to have a very, I don't want to say female, I guess female-centered point of view, or
yeah,
it's a lot of female issues. I don't know how to say this, but it was sort of a weird segment given that. But I liked most of the segments, and I don't think there's anything, which is the case with most horror films, there's always something you go, that one wasn't good. There'll be at least one that sucks, there'll be one that's good, and then you hope for something, you know, then the rest in between is what makes or breaks the film. I didn't find any that sucked, but I also, like I said, didn't find any that really made me go, woohoo.
Well, I think the problem with the film is that it wasn't really scary, and again, the producer, I guess you said Neil Marshall's wife, didn't make a better way of saying all the films have to be scary and dark, or all have to be funny and related to Halloween. And since they were mixed match, it felt more like ABCs of Death than VHS, I think, because
their rules were, like, obviously it had to be Halloween. They were all set on the same town, the same night. And it couldn't be found footage was another one of the rules. And then the length of the segments, it had to be, you know, such and such a length. They did use the same crew, and a lot of the same extras and actors for all the segments. So it had some uniformity and feel. And so, like, if you're paying attention, you know, you'll see a lot of the same trick or treaters, in different episodes.
The same police, the same. Yeah.
Right. But unlike something, let's say, like Creepshow, where all the segments were George Romero written and directed.
Well, that's the thing that was good about Creepshow, is that it was all written by Romero and King. And so it had a uniformity. This one, just like ABCs of Death, does not have a uniformity. And as a result, I think that's the reason why it won't be remembered.
I don't think it's as scattershot. I don't think it's as scattershot as ABC's A Death. That's just...
Right, but you know what I'm saying.
You guys want to do an episode on it?
The tone, we could, yeah. But the tone...
Because that's kind of what's happening right now.
Yeah. The tone between each episode just didn't match for me, I guess.
But I think what we really are going to be looking for is probably a Halloween-themed anthology film that's all written and directed by the same person. That would be pretty awesome if we could find something like that.
Yes. Exactly. anything else, Mike? Oh, did you see Diabolical? Because you said
No, I did not.
Okay.
The only other thing is the new season of Fargo started, and I've only seen the first episode, which is good. But if you have a reason to watch it, because this is set in 1979, is that it will beat Ash vs. Evil Dead by a couple of days in bringing Bruce Campbell back to the small screen, as he will be starring as presidential candidate Ronald Reagan.
Is that really true? In Fargo?
In Fargo. He'll be coming through in the Fargo series, stumping for the 1980 election. And it'll be Ronald Reagan as played by Bruce Campbell.
That just sounds so much fun. That just sounds fun.
What else, Mike? Did you see the Walking Dead last episode?
Yeah, it was a kick-ass episode.
Yes, it was. Yes. Anything else, Mike, you want to mention?
Nope, that's it.
All right. What about you, Chrissy?
I watched Halloween because AMC is having Fear Fest this month, and they're running a lot of great stuff. I'd forgotten how terrifying that movie still is. Those moments where he sits up behind her and you think he's dead are just so unbelievably creepy. They're still creepy. I'm getting ready for the big Horror Fest movie weekend this weekend with my cousin. So we've got about 10 or 15 movies that we can choose from to watch. So other than that, Damnation Land was awesome. I sent you guys the DVDs of 2015. I was impressed with the program this year. All of the films were strong. I thought there was one. There's always one or two. The 2014 collection I thought was the other way, that there was more weak material than there was strong material.
Chrissy, I have to interject for a second. Yeah. So this is a movie, something or other in Portland, Maine, is it?
What it is it's a movie festival in Portland, Maine. And every year they get about 9 or 10 Maine filmmakers to make horror shorts. And they show them all in one evening. And actually there are several screenings. There's about 10 or 15 more screenings between now and the end of the year, but I went to the opening night.
And this is in Maine, directly?
It was in Portland, Maine, yep, at the State Theater in Portland, Maine.
But are the movies from people from Maine that made them? Or
yes.
Are
they, okay. Yep. They're Maine filmmakers. And all Maine crews make them, and they're shot in Maine usually. There's only a couple in the past few years I've seen that are Maine filmmakers, but they shot them elsewhere. Like, there was one in 2012, I believe, that was shot in California, not in Maine. But for the most part, it's all Maine-made and very impressive. I mean, this year, like I said, there was just one, which I thought was absolutely self-indulgent and, quite frankly, just masturbatory. And you could have cut 15 minutes out of it and it still would have made its point. That filmmaker is probably very young or probably hasn't done very much yet. But the other ones were all awesome. They ranged from gory to scary to artsy to fun. Phil, there's one in there that has a distinct Lovecraftian feel to it. I'm sure you're going to enjoy. Eric, I really think you should watch Snip.
That doesn't sound very enjoyable.
I think you and Mike should really focus on Snip, actually.
All right.
But so, and what they do is they... Cats.
I'm thinking so.
They sell the DVDs. They sell them right there. So I was able to complete my collection and get the years I didn't have yet. And then I was able to pick up copies for this year. So in other words, Phil, there's screenings everywhere, but you don't have to now because you have the DVD, so you can just watch it at home.
But you were able to watch them on the big screen, right?
Yeah. Yep. With an audience. And the audience, going to an audience for something like that, to see it with an audience, is really fun because you're there with the actors, their families. You know, it's opening night. Their sisters, their friends, their boyfriends. So everybody's just having a really good time. There's a lot of reaction. It's just a lot of fun. There's a lot of partying. There's a lot of drinking. It's a really great night. So I really enjoyed it very much. And if anybody wants to get to it next year, it's usually around the middle of October. And it's just a really nice evening out. I also watched a documentary on the History Channel called Devils and Hell. Talked about my friend Matt Lake.
Wait a minute. Documentary?
Yeah, it was a documentary on the History Channel called Devils and Hell. I think that's what it's called. You know how they get authors and writers and experts and professors to come on to these sort of History Channel type shows and give little blurbs and cut in between? I found out about it because one of my friends, Matt Lake, who wrote one of the Weird U.S. books. I'm not sure which Weird U.S. he wrote now. I forget because it's been almost 10 years. But he was on it, and it was on his Facebook page, so I went to go watch it. And they talk about the Krampus legend, the Jersey Devil legend, a couple of exorcist-type stories. It's an hour long. It was streaming on the History Channel for free on their page, so you might want to check that out if it's still available. And the other thing is I have a story coming out in Sediments Literary Arts Journal in their A Haunting compendium for Halloween. The print issues, if you pre-ordered them, ship today. And the story I have in there is called Our Lips Are Sealed, and it's about a woman whose wine glasses start talking to her. Yeah, but I don't know if Phil is going to like it because there may be some not so nice things done to animals in it.
Oh, no.
Are they dogs?
No.
Oh, then it shouldn't be a problem.
Phil only cares about dogs.
Oh, okay. So that's it. That's it for me.
Oh, I did forget one thing, Phil. I chaperoned a trip for the senior class on Saturday to Dorney Park in Pennsylvania. They have their once the sun goes down, their Halloween themed park takes over. They help open up a bunch of haunted houses, and that was really kind of cool. There's some neat stuff, like a lot like Fright Fest and Great Adventure, and a lot of other parks do this now at Halloween too. So
and you went there with your high school class?
Yeah, it was chaperoned it with. They're all seniors. We brought most of them back too.
I have some real life stuff to talk about too. This is some people decided this was a horror story, which is I live within walking distance of the big house here in Ann Arbor, and on Saturday night in the last 10 seconds of the game, U of M lost their game because they fumbled a punt. So 71 people got arrested, and I think somebody's car got set on fire. So that was horrifying for a lot of people around here. And then, you know, doing this podcast and watching all the horror movies that we talk about, I often get to the point where sometimes I feel like it's a bummer that nothing scares me anymore because I'm so desensitized because of watching all the material all the time. I found out what can still scare me, which is my own brain. Monday night, I actually had a nightmare that I was in a basement somewhere, and on the ceiling were a bunch, just a megaton of spiders that had bodies probably about an inch and a half long and a leg span of about 4 inches. And there were just a mass of them on the ceiling. All of a sudden, they started dropping off the ceiling all at the same time. And I was trying to dodge them. And my efforts to dodge them in my dream, I actually hurled myself out of my own bed onto the floor. So I woke up hitting the floor on my hands and knees because I had dodged spiders. And that was pretty intense.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I was a little slow on Tuesday because I did not get a full night's rest on Monday night because of that nightmare and the manner in which I awoke from it.
Did you bring a cat down with you? Was there anybody like sleeping with Eric?
There was a cat next to me when I fell asleep. It was not there when I woke up. I don't know if it what happened in between.
Very well.
It's still alive, though, so nothing too horrible.
Oh, speaking of scare attractions, and this is relevant to tonight, actually, Scare House in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. This year, they're doing both a trick-or-treat haunt, and there's an upcoming movie called The Krampus, and they're doing a haunt for that, too. And what's cool about that is that those are IPs, and they're being used with full permission, which is odd for a smaller, you know, normally you only get the IPs used at the big theme parks like Universal.
Or, what's an IP?
Intellectual properties.
So you're talking like Frankenstein, Dracula? What do you?
Yeah. An intellectual property would be like, for example, if you went to Universal's Halloween Horror Nights this year, they have like a Walking Dead house. They have a Bill and Ted's thing. They have, you know, so they can pull from their various franchises. They'll do a Nightmare on Elm Street. They'll do a Freddy house, et cetera, et cetera. An Asylum house. They'll do an American Horror. I think they did an American Horror Story thing one year. But largely it's the major theme parks like Universal, Busch Gardens, like the really large ones that are able to get their hands on these movie intellectual properties to make into haunted houses to attract guests.
So this place in Pittsburgh has gotten permission.
Scare House, yeah. I guess the owners of the Trick or Treat franchise and the Krampus film. And I think, I want to say it was maybe Legend Films or Legendary. I'd have to look up who the owners of these two films are. But they decided instead of going, you know, with Orlando or going with one of these other giant parks, they decided to pick Tiny Little Scare House in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So if, and I believe it's still running through some of November. So if anybody's interested, you can head out to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania to Scare House. You can Google them online and you can visit the world of Samhain and Trick or Treat.
Cool.
Nice. Before we get into our little Halloween thing that we're going to do that we pretty much just, did right before the episode. There was one thing on the Dark Discussions podcast Facebook page I wanted to read. It's by, a listener from Australia, Glenn Hewitt, no relation to director John Hewitt, spelled differently. But this is what he had to write. He wrote, "I have to thanks you all at Dark Discussions for putting me on to the film These Final Hours after listening to your most recent episode. I not only watched it as a download, I went out and bought the Blu-ray edition. This was a film that completely slipped under my radar when it was released out here in Australia. The film reminded me of the short story The Last Day from Richard Matheson, 1953, as well as the Gregory Peck, Anthony Perkins, and Eva Gardner film On the Beach from 1959, and to a certain degree, the 2009 film Knowing. This film is not a pleasant ride, but it's certainly a worthwhile one, and it also proves that Australia has the capacity to make great films. Once again, thanks to Dark Discussions for the recommendation, and also keep up the fantastic work." So thanks to Glenn Hewitt, and Chrissy, you joined us for that episode as well, so he's thanking you as well. And so that was good to hear. This film is really under the radar for a lot of folks, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wrote back to him on the Facebook page. I'll say the same thing now, which is we really love it when somebody watches a lesser known movie because we talked about it. That's one of the main reasons we do this. And it pleases us a great deal. So thank you for letting us know.
Yep, absolutely. There's a couple other things. He also wrote after you mentioned that, Eric. He said, "I've not only been enjoying your most recent shows, but I've also delved into the archives since I discovered the show just a few months back and been working my way backwards." And then Talisha Tarver wrote under the same chain. She wrote, "I like this episode as well. Always on the lookout for something else. Hollywood isn't delivering too much right now, and I'm tired of TV zombies. They're great and all. Don't hate me. But man, cannot live alone on zombies." So
I'm not going to hate on anybody for not liking TV zombies. I'm right there with you.
Nope, me neither. I'm kind of tired of it all.
He is.
Yep, thanks. Also to Talisha Tarver as well. Let's see. All right, so I guess we can get into our Halloween stuff. Basically, right before the episode, I just texted you guys saying, hey, what's each from 2005 to now that aren't necessarily high profile, meaning non-Hollywood films, that you would recommend that people should see for Halloween that would be scary, that basically they may have either missed or they forgot about. And some of the films I chose, we've actually done episodes on, but a good portion I haven't. So anybody want to go first? Chrissy, why don't you go first, since you had a great line when you said, I'll have to work quick.
And, well, no, what I said was... Yeah. What I said was, I think I can pull something out of my ass. At which point Eric said, I'm going to go try to pull something out of Christy's ass.
Right. Well, after that chili this afternoon, I'm going to try to pull it out of my own ass, that's for sure.
I could only come up keeping in mind little known films or films that kind of flew under the radar for me that I know were not major releases. I could only come up with six. Let me see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Six that I really, really adored that I would recommend everybody see. So I said, right. Well, six Chrissy, really good ones is better than 10.
Before you begin, everybody, yeah. Get your pen and paper.
Wait,
and be ready to start writing some films down. Yes,
Phil. Please. Phil, I missed this assignment because I hadn't been on Facebook. Was it six films we were supposed to be doing, or is it just one?
Ten.
So ten films.
Yeah. So
yeah, I know. Phil gave this to us an hour before the episode. Wasn't that nice of him?
Oy, okay.
So, Mike, what you can do is you go last, so maybe you can start thinking of stuff right now. But
I already started thinking of stuff. I don't know if I have stuff, though. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, you ready?
Go ahead.
I didn't write down any of the years of these, but these are the last 10. I know they're within the last 10 years. I really enjoyed a found footage film called Delivery. This is not The Devil's Due. It's called Delivery. And it is your typical, you know, woman pregnant, possessed. But it's honestly excellent. It's excellent. It is tight. It doesn't break the fourth wall. It does not break the perspective. Everything makes sense. Now, the Chrissy, fun part of it is, yeah.
Is this the film about a couple that is on a reality TV show?
Yes. And then,
yeah, that's actually a good film. I think.
Yeah,
I
it's very good. And the ending is, oh my God, I did not see that ending coming. Holy crap.
Yeah, that was
yeah, so definitely, I'm saying definitely on that one. Lake Mungo, which is sort of a fake documentary. What do they call them? A mockumentary?
Right. I saw that at the theaters, believe it or not.
Yeah, it's Australia. I believe it's Australian,
it
right,
Phil? It is Australian film, yes.
Really good. Spooky. It's just spooky. It's very unsettling.
I've seen that. It's well done.
Yeah, I really liked it.
There's rumors that they may make an American remake, but not.
Oh, leave it alone. It's so good. Just see the original, folks. Don't wait for the crappy remake.
Yeah, it'll be in the same language, too, so it doesn't even matter. It's so stupid. But anyway, go on.
It's called The Haunting, but it is the Fangoria Fright Fest, The Haunting. And it is a Spanish film with English subtitles. The original Spanish, it's called Nodo, N-O-D-O. But there's so many films out there called, or TV shows called Haunting, or The Haunting, or A Haunting. It's The Haunting, and it's the Fangoria Fright Fest version.
You actually mentioned this about a year ago.
I've mentioned this few times. It's fantastic, and it's very scary, and it's got a complicated mystery. So if you like mysteries, you're really going to like this one. But you need to pay attention. It's not one of these popcorn movies where you can be like, you know, stuffing your goodie bags for your Halloween party. You really have to pay attention to this thing, particularly because also it's subtitled. Fragile, which was the one with Calista Flockhart. I really thought that was quite scary. Yeah.
That was certainly under the radar. That's for sure.
Yeah. That was by one of the guys that did Wreck too, I believe.
Yeah, and I thought when we saw Calista Flockhart was in it, we were like, oh no, this is going to be the worst piece of crap ever. And at the end of the movie, we were like, that was really good. Like, you almost forget that she is who she is. I think she did a great job. I thought the story was nice and tight. It didn't have too many jump scares. I just thought it was genuinely scary. I love the found footage movie Hollow, which was one of the American Express for a little while did this kind of this film project, sort of like a Project Greenlight or whatever. And they chose some films and chose what they were going to release. And this one was one of them. It is a found footage film. It takes place in England. It definitely flew under the radar. People said it was slow. I disagree.
Are there nooses involved?
Yes.
Okay, I've seen that.
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
A full feature length film?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It is. Eric, and it's very psychological. Wouldn't you say, Eric, it's more psychological than it is jump scary.
Yep.
So if you don't like psychological type stuff, stay away from this, but I loved it. It's called Hollow. And the last one I'd like to recommend is a ghost story that I just watched that I picked up for like $1 at the book sale last week. Messengers, with the guy from Stalker and the first season of American Horror Story. I forget what his name is. And still I forget McDermott? What his name is.
Yeah, that's it. McDermott.
Oh, McDermott. Okay, yeah. I thought it was just a nice, creepy little ghost story. Really well done. And by the way, those ones I said were in no real particular order. Those are just... Right. If I had to recommend six things that you've probably never seen or that got kind of missed, those would be the six I'd pick because those are my faves that I really liked.
Yeah, and the ones that I've seen out of those, I agree. Those are really good ones, yeah. Eric, did you like Hollow, by the way?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Okay. Very good. All right. Let's see. I'll go next. I put a list of 10. I got some that we've done episodes on, as I said.
See, because really, Phil made his list of 10, Eric, and then he decided to send us all an email an hour before.
Oh, don't worry, Chris. I know exactly how that works.
but believe it or not, I made the list 10 minutes before I texted you guys. So, okay, the first one is Come Back to Me. We did an episode on that, and I recommend folks should see this. Little film that was easily one of the best films of last year, I thought. Lovely Molly, and though we did an episode on it.
I might have matching lists.
Oh, really? Okay. Which is another really good demon story or ghost story. The Taking of Deborah Logan. We did an episode on that one as well. Good found footage about a possible possession. And now here's the ones that we didn't do episodes on. Left Bank. It's a Belgian film and it is Flemish, not the Waterloons, Eric. so they speak Dutch in this film. It's a subtitle, obviously. It is a very surreal ending that comes out of, is kind of weird. Kirstie, you would love this film because this is like, the symbolisms and all that stuff. This is your type of film.
So I'd have to really be focused on it and make my notes. Okay, cool. I
love exactly. Like that. Yeah, Left Bank, it's called.
And I agree with you, Taking of Deborah Logan, by the way. I thought that was fantastic. And the reason I watched it is because Mike recommended it way back when on some other episode. And I don't know if I was on the
episode. That was the top 10 episode out for the season, for the year, I think.
Maybe, yeah. And I was like, ooh, and I wrote it down and I ran right out and bought it. And then I watched it and I just loved it. And I just got done listening to your episode on it. So, yeah, it was really good. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was really good. Then I have a film called Believers. And it's the one that was directed by one of the guys that did The Blair Witch. Not Ed Sanchez, but the other one, Dan Merrick, I think his name is. It's called Believers. It's a... apocalyptic film, not a post-apocalyptic, but apocalyptic film, maybe. Or maybe it's just a cult. I've watched it 3 times, and every time I've enjoyed it. It's a really creepy, scary film, and the ending is kind of cool. An Australian film is next, and that's Storm Warning. same director that did Urban Legends and Valentine, which are slashes. This is completely different than that. It's a couple gets lost in the bayou or the salt marshes in Australia, find a house, and the people at that house may have issues. It's a very scary film. And there's a kick-ass ending where the quote-unquote heroes get out. The next film is Outpost, which is, I think it's an international cast, but I think it's mostly British folk. It takes place in Eastern Europe, probably the Balkans, about mercenaries going in to war-torn Yugoslavia, or I assume, and they're there to basically find a gold. And when they get there, they find out that their mission was not what they were told. Very scary film. I didn't come
what
up here.
What was that one
to,
called, Phil?
It's called Outpost. Okay. They've made a sequel to it, which has not gotten as that good review, so I never bothered seeing it. But the original, called Outpost, it's really good. The next film is I Didn't Come Here to Die. Low budget slasher from last year, I think. Really good film. Or maybe
is that
2 years ago.
The chainsaw.
Yes, yeah, the accident.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it has one of the best deaths ever, right?
Yep.
High recommend. Definitely worth checking out. Next one is Simon Killer. Very art house film. It's basically a story of an American that goes to Paris and is basically the creation of a sociopath and how he probably would possibly become a serial killer if the movie was 4 hours long instead of just 2 hours. So it's an interesting character study. Well done film. And then the last film is a film that at one point I had listed as the best film of the year 2 years ago before I lowered it to like 12th. But it's, called Byzantium.
Yeah.
A vampire film starring, Gemma Arterton. And then I forget the other girl's name, but she's a big actress too. Very stylish and well done. So those are my 10 good horror films to watch during the Halloween time that you may have not seen yet. Eric?
Yeah. Well, a lot of these we've done episodes on because, honestly, I had so little time to work with on this that I needed a quick place to reference a bunch of movies I know I had seen. So my list starts with Altered. It's an Eduardo Sanchez movie from 2006. It involves an alien. It's a little different than your other type of movies like that, so I recommend that one, Altered. Another Eduardo Sanchez that Phil already mentioned, Lovely Molly. We did an episode on that. I think we all recommend that one. And I also had a hard time kind of like defining under the radar when I was trying to make this list. The general populace has a really different idea of under the radar than people that listen to this podcast. So people who listen to this podcast, these might not be under the radar, but it's the best I could do on short notice. Black Death I had on here, a movie directed by Christopher Smith starring Sean Bean. Excellent. Excellent.
And Eddie dark, Redmayne, dark too, movie.
Yes. That's correct, Phil. Then I picked a Korean movie called The Host. Again, the crowd that listened to this podcast probably knows about it already, but it's a Korean monster movie with a monster unlike anything else you've ever seen. It's different, which is cool. Absentia, we've done an episode on that one.
Nice.
It's a low-budget psychological thriller. I enjoyed that one a lot. The Bay, I put on this list from a couple years ago. It's a found footage movie. I haven't heard a lot of people talking about it.
I love that movie.
It's
love,
fantastic.
Love it. It's awesome.
Yes. And it's one of the, I think, one of the better found footage movies out there.
Yeah, it's almost like the mockumentary type, like the Lake Mondo type.
Yeah, yeah. So I really recommend The Bay. Triangle, another Christopher Smith movie that Phil and I did an episode on, with starring Melissa George. I love that movie. So highly recommend that one. I think that's from 2009. One we did an episode on not too long ago is Starry Eyes. For the general populace, that was under the radar, probably not for people who listen to this. I recommend that one. Phil already talked about Come Back to Me. So I doubled down on that. Come Back to Me is an excellent one to check out. And then a Swedish movie from a few years back called Trollhunter, which has got a bit of humor to it.
I love Trollhunter.
It's so much fun.
It's awesome.
It's because it's not to be taken completely serious, so it's got a very good sense of humor to it. But at the same time, it's got some fantastic visual effects that somehow make these trolls look real, even though they at the same time look very cartoonish. I don't know quite how to describe it, but it's worth watching, so you can try to describe it as well.
And yet, that's how the trolls were supposed to look. Like in Norse mythology, isn't it?
Oh, I know. Absolutely.
Well, yeah, they look like giant Jim Henson creations.
And they look real, even though they can't pause. It's really intriguing. So I recommend watching that movie just to see the trolls, because they're done fantastically.
Well, and also, in all honesty, too, the footage, it's all shot in Norway, and the footage of the fjords and the forests and how green and how beautiful everything is there, too, is really incredible. And it's genuinely scary. It's got some pretty terrifying moments.
There's a couple moments. Yeah.
Oh, the best is the best line of that film.
No,
even better than that was when they go they eat the flesh and bones of Christian people, and then the girl goes, "But I'm Muslim," and he goes, "Well, we'll have to find out." Because we have no idea.
And that was exactly the line I was thinking of, Phil. So we're on the same wavelength for a change.
Yeah. What do you mean? We're always at the same
level. So that's my list.
Nice. Yeah, I had Starry Eyes, and I took it off and replaced it with Left Bank. And not because Starry Eyes, I just thought, you know, Starry Eyes.
Trying to mix it up. I guess.
Yeah, mix it up. Yep. Exactly. And I almost had Jug Face. I almost put that on there, too.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Mike, did you put anything together in the past 10 minutes?
First of all, because it was easier, I just Googled horror movies starting in 2005, and I put down stuff. I stopped at 2010, because that's about when Dark Discussion started. So if you want to know any of my recommendations for what's come out since Dark Discussion started, just email Michelle Barkley. She'll be able to tell you. But so things like Starry Eyes, you know, or... there's actually, I think, only one thing in here that I don't remember mentioning, but I figured a good ghost story should go in there. And I was immediately tempted to go for some, like, bigger films that I know we've done episodes on, or certainly fans of the genre know, like The Mist, or The Descent, or The Ruins.
Yeah, those are all good.
The Last Exorcism. But you want it under the radar, so I went a little deeper. So from 2005 is Isolation, which I think was an Irish or Scottish film.
Yeah, I think it's Irish. I haven't seen it.
On a farm?
Yeah. Is that one about cows or something?
Yeah, killer cow movie.
Oh! That's really good.
Yeah, which is not, I want to point out, it is a killer cow movie, and it is not in any way played for laughs. It's not ironically, you know, there's the killer cow fetus movie. It's scary, though. Yeah, it works. Yeah, it actually works. We mentioned Lucky McKee. We've talked about The Woman before, and May goes a little bit outside of this. He has a film called The Woods, which I'm basically recommending. It's sort of like an American Suspiria. The main advantage it has over Suspiria is that it has Bruce Campbell. So, okay. This one, I'm sure a lot of our fans remember. I haven't heard anyone talk about it in a while, which was a Spanish or French film? It was Them? French film. Ills.
Oh, yeah, Them. French, yeah, either, them. Yeah. Yeah.
Ills.
Yeah, it takes place in Romania. Yeah, about two teachers that go to Romania to teach French to the, you know, the locals, and then what happens, right?
Right. And it's basically a home invasion movie. But it's a really, really awesome home invasion film. And it's something that everybody loved when I first started listening to horror podcasts. And I, like I said, I haven't heard anyone talking about it in about 3 or 4 years. So I thought that was worth bringing it up.
Sorry, what is it called?
The Strangers?
Them. Yes, it's actually yes. Ills, ILS.
Eric's right, though. The Strangers, that was like almost inspiration for The Strangers.
Right. What's a really nice cold country people, Swedes film is Cold Prey. I don't
know. That's Norway. Yep.
I haven't seen that.
The highest profile film on my list.
Yeah, Cold Prey 2 is really good too, Eric. There's a Cold Prey 3 that hasn't been released in the States yet, but Cold Prey 1 and 2 are really good. You should check them out.
And that's a slasher film, right? I would probably kind of categorize it as that. The highest profile film on my list is Feast, which was Project Greenlight. And it's just, I thought a really fun horror comedy. I have not seen any of the sequels, but I would recommend the original. The horror western, The Burrowers.
Yeah, you always love that one, Mike. I've never seen it.
Which is a nice little monster movie, and the only actor I can remember being in it is the guy who plays the Dick from Green Mile.
Oh, yeah. Percy. Percy.
The guy who plays Percy from The Green Mile, I believe, was in it. Then back to the horror comedy and slasher genre with The Cottage was an English comedy.
That's Andy Serkis is in that one, right?
What's that? Yeah, with Andy Serkis, they kidnaps as a kidnapper who kidnaps the daughter of a mob boss and then makes the mistake of hiding out next to the wrong farm. And it's very strange because it's like a clear demarcation, sort of like From Dusk Till Dawn, in that the film switches over at one point from being basically a farcical crime comedy to being a slasher film.
Okay.
Grace.
Oh yeah, yeah. The zombie.
If you want to something disturbing, a nice. Nice movie that you don't ever want to be showing a pregnant woman. Another horror comedy, English, is Murder Party. I think that one's good for Halloween because it involves it's Halloween.
It's a costume
party. Yeah. And it's funny, basically about a group of people who decide to kill somebody as part of their Halloween party and everything goes wrong. And then the most recent one on my list was a 2012, maybe? Ghost Story, The Pact.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
So if you're looking for a ghost story, I think that one might serve. It's not a brilliant film, but, you know, if you're looking for something under the radar you've never seen before, I think this was a good one that would probably work for Halloween.
Yep. No, that's a good one, too. They made a Pact 2, which didn't get as good reviews, but,
Right. Haven't seen it.
I haven't seen that one because of the, it just got mediocre reviews. Another film I know that you would recommend, Mike, that we didn't mention is Splinter.
Yeah, Splinter was another one that I was thinking, do I want to do it? And I said, well, we did an episode on it. I'm trying. You said under the radar, so I would have pulled that one if I needed to round out the list. But as it was, I had 10. So, and then I stopped.
Right, and there was another one I just wanted to throw out. I saw it the same day as Come Back to Me because I saw both of those when on a day I was sick from work and I was just going through Netflix, and that was Truth or Die. It's called Truth or Die. Really good English film, kind of a slasher. And I was quite surprised how good it was. I mean, I hadn't heard anything about it, and, you know, it came out of nowhere type of thing, and it was a good one. So Truth
or Die. Oh, yeah, and there was that actually, I mentioned there was that one with Jeffrey Combs. The torture porn subgenre.
Would you rather?
Which, because really, it's not. You could sort of put it in the torture porn genre, but they don't actually show much in the film.
Yeah, this one's Truth or Die is similar to that, but a different setup, but similar to that. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, and that was a good one too. Would You Rather was actually a pretty good one. Yep.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw Would You Rather. That's pretty good.
Yep. So, all right. So that's a good list of horror films that people may have not seen that they may just want to check out, especially during this time of year, Halloween.
So put that in your pipe and smoke it.
So there's 40 movies. You've got a week. Go.
That's right.
And we all want reports on the Facebook page.
That's right.
Yes. Exactly. Oh, Lily didn't give her recommendations.
Yeah.
I know. No. Cujo. She says Cujo. I got it.
Yeah.
Cujo. Cujo.
The Howling.
Cujo.
Old Yeller.
The Howling. Old from a dog's point of view, it's sort of like, you know, it's like a zombie apocalypse movie, right? You know, the dogs and stuff.
It is.
You know, it's
and being what was killed by your master too.
Yeah. Spoiler warning.
Terrible. Anyway, so yep. So there's some good films, and that I guess can lead us to our topic tonight. All right, so Eric, what is
it? Ash vs. Evil Dead starts Saturday. Sorry,
what is it?
What?
Ash vs. Evil Dead starts Saturday.
Halloween.
Well, I saw the trailer for The Boy today, which comes out in January, which means they don't expect it to do well, but it looks creepy, and I'm definitely in.
And who's
you're in The Boy?
It? Yeah, it's called The Boy. Have you guys heard of it?
No.
Yes, I think. I mean, it's a generic horror title, so. You know, there might be 19 movies with that name.
Yeah, it stars the girl who plays Maggie on The Walking Dead.
Oh, on The Walking Dead. I thought you meant Maggie from the movie Maggie.
No, she doesn't play the boy, does she?
No. The boy is basically a doll.
Okay. And the actress Maggie from her last name's Cohen, I think, in the real life.
Yeah. Lauren, is it Lauren Cohen or
Lauren Cohen?
Yeah, maybe that's it.
But it looks, you know what? I'm totally in because it looks good, and it could be totally bad and totally full of cliches, but it just looks fun. So, and it's going to be January, so why the hell not?
Yep, very good. All right, so Eric, with that stated, let everybody know what we're going to discuss tonight.
Tonight we are going to be discussing the Michael Dougherty written and directed movie Trick or Treat.
That's right. Trick or Treat, as Eric said, Michael Dougherty is the writer and director of the film. The film is a Bryan Singer produced film, which I did not know until a couple days ago when I rewatched the film. I've only seen it twice now. No lead, true lead, I mean, because it's an ensemble cast. But there is a couple of fairly well-known actors, such as Brian Cox, Anna Paquin, before she did True Blood, Leslie Bibb, who's had numerous supporting roles in a number of, and actually starring roles in a number of smaller films as well, Dylan Baker and such. It's a horror anthology, films that you like, Mike, you usually like horror anthologies. And it is from 2007. Imagine that. It's 8 years old already.
Yikes.
Yeah, no kidding. And it is specifically Halloween themed. And though we said anthology, as Mike said earlier, wouldn't it be cool to have a horror anthology that was written and directed by the same person so it all gels correctly? And this film is that film, Michael Dougherty. And not just horror anthology, but Halloween horror anthology. Mm-hmm. Now let's discuss how people have heard about this film when it first came out and all that, or and what they thought about it. So Eric, why don't you let us know when you saw it, how you saw it, how you heard about it, and whatnot.
I honestly don't know how I heard about this movie to begin with. So I'll give Horror Etc. credit by default because it was probably them. But I think I just bought it on disc and brought it over to Dan's house and we watched it and had a blast. Cause we were not expecting the humor element, which is definitely in there. So it was a lot more fun than we were expecting. It's also got some good horror going on too.
Yep. Yeah, for me, I think I heard about it from Dread Central, the website. I'm not usually a big horror anthology fan. I actually do like the VHS horror anthology. I thought they're really good. I wasn't at the time, which this is predates the VHS, that thrilled to see it because it's a quote unquote anthology. But, I checked it out, bought the disc anyway because I heard, good reviews. I know a lot of people just like it because, oh, it's Halloween. But still, I read other reviews from, quote-unquote geeks, nerds, whatever, genre fans, and they said it was good as well. And I had the same experience you, Eric. I had a blast. I actually discovered something in it that was, you discovered that it had humor in it, and I was surprised to find that it had exploitation elements in it. And because I was just expecting, straight horror, and it had a throwback to, the drive-in and grindhouse films of the 70s and 60s and even early 80s. So that was interesting to see when I saw it. It was a good film. What about you, Mike?
I don't remember when I heard about it first, so I'll say when President Obama brought it up in a State of the Union address. I don't really remember. It was probably, like Eric said, probably Horror Etc. or one of the other various websites, because this is something that was one of those notorious films like House of a Thousand Corpses that the studio had. People had seen it in festivals and said, you should see this, and they just sat on forever and never ended up getting a theatrical release before they ended up just dumping it on home video. Because while it's, I think, officially 2007, I don't think I think it only got a real release in like 2009. I think is when it actually landed on home video.
Okay.
It took a couple of years for that to happen. And I mean, I think it probably had like one of those, we'll show it for one day in New York and LA, and that way we can say it had a theatrical release. But really just hit home video. And first time I saw it, I think I was I liked it, but I wasn't that thrilled with it. But this is a film that has just grown and grown and grown on me every time I watch it. And it is a bit – it's sort of like – the closest I can think of in structure is maybe something like Pulp Fiction, weirdly enough.
Yeah,
Because it's all these stories that are separate but connected. And you could – each story stands on its own, but when you view them all together – each one becomes a little stronger. And so you also have this sort of puzzle aspect to it. So as you're watching it, you're looking for different clues and how they tie together. And what are some things that carry over? In some cases, it's very obvious. And some cases, not so obvious.
Yep. and we'll get into some of that shortly. What about you, Chrissy?
When this came out, I was finishing my MFA, so I really wasn't seeing too many movies. I would like to say I know I saw this on DVD. I know I saw it in my own house. I don't remember when. I know I watched it with Nathan and Charles. It terrified me the first time I saw it. The last story really scared the hell out of me.
Now, you got to be more specific when you say last.
The Samhain attacks Mr. Creed story.
Okay.
Was very terrifying to me. There were some images in there that were really unsettling, and it took me a very long time to get them out of my brain so that
you're creeped out by old men too?
Yeah. No, the old man was not my problem.
Achilles.
We'll get into that, but continue what you're saying.
And I was fascinated by the Rubik's Cube feel to the whole thing, trying to put the pieces together, as Mike had called it a puzzle, and I think he's just about spot on with that. So I've watched it pretty much every Halloween since, at least once, probably a couple of times. If I have people over to watch a movie, we usually put that one in because it's got such a nice mix of scary and funny and gory. It's just really fun. My husband always says it's the one that he feels is the anthology that truly is like almost a throwback to the creep shows.
Well, I also want to point out
the creep shows.
Yeah, this is only this is a rated R film, but it's because there's one boob shot and there's one scene where a kid says butt fuck. And I think if you really remove that, this probably could pass for PG-13 because I don't think there's anything that gory in it.
Yeah, what it is, it has exploitation elements without actually going to the really, right? Because it's strong sexual themes, is some kind of gore stuff, but supernatural, not necessarily blood, you know, serial killer gore stuff. But you're right. It's an interesting film to categorize like that. But go on, Mike.
But I say, so I think this also works if you're looking for a film to show kids that are not too young. I mean, I wouldn't go like 7 or 8. But certainly if you're trying to, you know, want to show something to a kid that's maybe 12, I think you could probably pull this off. You know, as long as the parents aren't going to bitch at you because, you know, they heard the word buttfuck.
Stop laughing when you say that.
Well, and even that's sort of tame because it's a kid who says it. So really you get one very quick booby shot. And if you walk in front of the TV at just the right time.
You mean new boobs, because there's a lot of boobie shots, but yeah.
Well, right, there's only one nipple shot. So this almost works as a near all ages entertainment. So you could watch this with mom and dad. You could watch it with teenagers, certainly, and maybe even a lot of tweens, unless you have ones that are really, really sensitive. So, and I think the stories are different enough. They're not all, and deliberately the way they're structured, because everyone's very different in terms of their age, so the stories all play differently. Yeah, I think true. Everyone's going to have a different favorite.
Yep, that's true.
Yeah, I know which one. I'd have a tough time picking my favorite, because there's two that I would really like to choose as my favorite. Well, I'm kind of tied.
Let's let Phil give his opinion, but then I have some specific things to say.
All right, first off, I just want to bring up Mike Daugherty, who he is. He's the writer-director, as we said. But he is obviously a good friend with Bryan Singer, as we mentioned, because Singer produced the film. Just as Springer produced Deborah Logan, the Taking Deborah Logan. So that director is good friends with him as well. But he has written, Michael Daugherty has written the screenplay or the story based on the screenplay for films like X2, X-Men United, obviously this film Trick or Treat, Superman Returns, and the upcoming X-Men Apocalypse, which comes out next year, 2016. He is the screenwriter for that as well. He also has a film called Krampus that is coming out near Christmas, a horror film. I think, Chrissy, you brought it up earlier. And that's all I want to say about him. Otherwise, I don't know too much about him. My opinion of the film is I wasn't looking forward to see it specifically for the fact that it was being hyped to the ridiculous. So I was saying, here it is, just all the nerds saying, the Halloween film is awesome, it's awesome. But after seeing it, I thought it was really good. I liked that throwback exploitation thing without actually really showing anything, as you said, Mike, which was curious. And the stories were good. It was well written. They gelled correctly. Each story fit appropriately. It wasn't like Tales of Halloween, where it had different tones. And it did have some humor as well without being slapstick, as you said, Eric. And so, yeah, I actually really liked it the first time I had seen the film back when it first came out on disc. And I think you said it was 2009, Mike, and that's when I got it. But I didn't revisit it, even though the disc has been sitting here. I never bothered revisiting it, probably again because of the hype of everybody saying, oh, it's the best film ever, best film ever, should have been released in theaters, blah, 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 blah. And yet, rewatching it this week, again, it's still a great film. So yeah, I enjoyed it a lot as well. I mean, I'm not too pissed that it didn't get a theatrical release, because as like all the people last year that were saying Babadook should have been the one, blah, 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 blah. There's so many great horror films that never get released to theaters and go straight to VOD. For example, Eric, you brought one up this week, Circle. You know, I mean, we mentioned Lovely Molly, Come Back to Me. You know, all the films we listed on our top 40, basically, none of them were at the theaters. You know, so that doesn't really bother me that much.
Well, but there's also commercial aspects, and the idea of a Halloween themed horror movie not being released in theaters at Halloween, it seems like an obvious marketing thing.
Well, you know, though, Mike, it's like the movie, the Bigfoot movie exists. Why that one wasn't released at theaters and it was a cheap, found footage just, and yet other found footage films or a film like Oculus gets picked up and is released. So I have no idea.
The gallows, such a win.
You know, so.
but that's because I think there's people who are short-sighted, and Bigfoot movies are not, nobody's releasing them in theaters.
All right, then Mike, I think we're talking two different things. You're talking about, oh, it should have been released to theaters because of the theme, and I'm just saying that it doesn't bother me that it wasn't released to theaters because it was a great film and a lot of great films, you know, out of like the 40 we just named.
I think Mike gets more upset about things not being released theatrically than the rest of us.
Yeah, you could be right, too. Yeah, that's fair. Nothing wrong with that, Mike, but it's just a matter of perspective, I guess. So yeah, all right. So that was my opinion. So who would want to begin? Oh, actually, you know what? Chrissy, you mentioned something about the stories in it. So let's just let me. I'm at Wikipedia and it lists the titles of the stories. There's the opening, which is the Leslie Bibb story. The principal, which is the Dylan Baker story. The school bus massacre revisited, which is the children's story. The surprise party, which is the Anna Paquin story, there's the meet Sam story, which is the Brian Cox story, and then there is the conclusion, which is what happens to the Brian Cox character at the end, and that's how it's broken out by Wikipedia, and all these stories do have parts that pop up in each other. In other words, the characters pop up in each of their stories, in a sense, because they do pieces here. But go on, Eric.
I was just going to say that that's one of the great things about this movie, is that as far as the storytelling structure goes, it has some similarities with Pulp Fiction, in that even though there's separate characters with separate storylines going on, they all kind of intermingle. That's one of the great things about rewatching this movie is that every time you watch it, you pick up one more thing in the background that ties all the stories together.
And the timeline too, right?
The timeline too, because the beginning is actually at the end of the timeline.
Yeah.
And if you, it'll probably take a couple times through to put it all together. But once you do, you're like, oh, that's so sweet. And then if you listen to the commentary on it, they put it together for you even more. So I just wanted to say that I appreciated that aspect of the movie, the fact that not only are these four stories, but they're woven together so well and done intentionally by the creators.
I was going to say, and each of these, because I mentioned the other anthology that came out recently, A Christmas Horror Story, last week.
Yes.
And that follows a similar structure to this.
Yes.
And there are crossovers in those stories, but the difference is the crossovers in those stories are sort of blink and it's easy to miss it. Here, the crossovers, everyone has a key player in their story that's a part of a different story.
And yes, and there's also, are you referring to specific characters, or are you referring to the Sam character, which is the little...
Well, there's the Sam character that at least makes a cameo in all three, but for instance, the old man is a key figure in, obviously, his story. He is a marginal figure in the father and son story, and it turns out to be a big figure in the school bus massacre story.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And then of course during all these stories, the four girls, the Anna Paquin, and the other three actresses, Lauren Lee Smith, Rochelle Aites, I guess it's pronounced, and Monica Delane, they appear and have like 4 to 5 minute segments throughout the film in almost every story too. In my opinion, I think the school bus massacre story is probably the one that is furthest away from the rest.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, yeah. Because it's almost like, until the very end when you see why it is part of the whole thing, but during the middle, it doesn't seem like it fits as well as the others. Even not in tone. If it fits tone wise, it fits fine. But it doesn't see. I don't see how it relates to other stories until there's a big
reveal.
Reveal, yeah, at the end that it, and it's like, now I see. So what else? Anybody else want to add anything before we discuss various things? Chrissy, why don't you talk about? You said there were two stories out of all these that you liked the best. Which ones were you referring to?
My two favorites were The School Bus Massacre Revisited and Meet Sam.
Okay. Yep.
I think the one that I'm going to give it to as the winner is The School Bus Massacre story, because there's a very poignant moment in there that is so unbelievably sad. It's not even that it's scary, it's sad. And I think that in terms of the rhythm of this film, with all the different stories and the tone is very consistent, you have this one very sad moment, and yet it still fits seamlessly right into the middle of the film. With that, like, in other words, it doesn't jar us out of it. So, but I know Eric wanted to say some things before too, so I didn't know what you wanted to say.
I said what I wanted to say.
Okay. Since you mentioned, do we want to go for our favorite segment?
All right, go ahead, Mike. You lead off.
Well, I'm going to go with School Bus Massacre. Probably is my favorite segment of the bunch. Oh,
and which is your least favorite? Your favorite and least favorite. I'm just curious.
Christy, what was your least favorite?
My least favorite is actually the wolf one.
Okay.
Yeah.
The surprise party.
I mean, I think I almost want to say the one I care about the least is the opening segment, but it's such a, because it's so thin. And it's really just there to frame the whole narrative.
Sure.
I don't even count that as a storyline.
Yeah. So I don't really count that as one of the stories, because even the comic book shows, right, that the title sequence says it's four tales of terror. Well, if you do the counting, if you count the bracketing segment, it's really five. But yeah, I'll agree with the wolf, and I think the wolf, I don't know if it's the weakest for me because it's the girls going to the party. I don't know if that's the weakest because it's weak or because it's the one that I think is the most heavily chopped up and spread out throughout the entire film.
Yeah, because that's the one that they
break it up where there's 5 minutes in each story, or 6 or 3 minutes here, or 2 minutes here. So it's not consecutive, is what you're saying.
No, I don't know if they did that because it was the weakest segment and they broke it up for that reason, or if that weakened the whole thing as a result, or if it's my personal preference.
That. I can answer that.
Go ahead, Phil.
Well, I think it's the best segment by far.
Because it's got the most boobs, but yes.
Boobs.
Well, that... Well, that's true. It has the well, I'll let it go with that. But yes, that's part of it. It has exploitation throwback 70s and early 80s type feel. As well, the special effects were fantastic in that one, I thought. I was not expecting it. I mean, you think one thing is going to happen where who the victims are, and then suddenly, boom, we get this other thing that happens. And so, for a horror film, that one was the best, in my opinion, for me. I thought the weakest was the school bus massacre, because that one, like I said, it didn't, it felt standalone until we get the reveal at the end. And it had the things that, a couple of things like this quarry that people could just press buttons and go down, and so it was the most unrealistic of the bunch, I thought, because of that. So I think it's just perspective.
I think for me, the wolf story was weak because it simply just felt like every other piece of cheese I had ever seen. And they weren't even trying to do anything super original with it. I just felt like, oh, they're going to a party. And then there were two or three references to the moon and two or three very obvious script references to Runt of the Litter. And by the third reference...
They telegraphed the werewolf thing the whole way.
Yeah, the whole time. See, I was just sitting here going, okay, can we just finish up now? Like, they're going to eat the women and the people and the costumes, and can we move on? I just thought there wasn't anything spectacularly original with it, whereas I thought the other stories had a little bit more turns that were sort of surprising and a little bit different. Like, I didn't expect to see the fat kid's head on the wheel at the end there of the principal story. And I didn't expect, although at the end when we talk about it, the movie did break its own rules at the end, which really I didn't like very much, but we can talk about that later.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. You're going to ruin this movie for me, too.
Eric, what about you? What was your favorite and what was your least favorite?
Well, my least favorite, well, it depends on what you define as the story. Because my least favorite was the principal, if you cut out the ending, because I kind of like the ending. But they had the principal in it, but the rest of the story at his house, I didn't like that much. And I like Sam the best because that creature design was just fucking awesome.
All right. Very well. Yeah. So, Chrissy and Mike, pretty much agree. And then, me and Eric have our own distinct likes as well. Me and you, Eric, you chose two that none of us chose, and I chose the complete opposite as Chrissy and Mike. So it just shows you how diverse the film is and how diverse each individual would be that would watch this film and say, oh, that's the best. So if you like 1970s, you know, cheese, as Chrissy says, then you're going to love the werewolf one or the slasher, because, you know, it's the girls going to the party and whatever. And, you know, that, to me, is awesome. Eric, you
but you compare this to like Creepshow, which I still think is the gold standard for an anthology. But almost everybody who sees Creepshow, almost all of them, what's your favorite segment? It's the crate.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, and you know what's the weakest segment? It's the lonesome death of Jordy Verrill. There's a wide set of, you know, set of agreements there on the quality of those stories, where here I think each one appeals to different people for different reasons because they're all very different stories.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And that actually is probably a good thing. And yet, you know, not only is that a good thing, but no matter how different they are, the tone of the film still remains the same generally,
right,
straight through, which makes it even more unique. And the talent of Mike Dougherty as a writer and I guess as a director too, because he was able to put these stories together and hold them together without any tonal shift where, like, say, Tales of Halloween, which is still a good movie, you know, don't worry about that, but it, the tone pulls me out. While here, it didn't. Nothing pulled me out of this film.
Well, I think he had a brilliant conceit in structuring the stories in that he looked at it as sort of like the different ages of Halloween.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he said, like, so you have the kids trick-or-treating.
Yep.
Right, that's how we experience Halloween when we're, you know, like 7, 8, 10, up, you know, up to like maybe 12 years old. And then you have the college kids partying.
Yep.
And that's what Halloween is to them. Yep. And then you have, you know, the adults, you know, the young married couple who go off, you know, to the Halloween parade, you know, and there's a Halloween for them. You got the father now teaching the Halloween traditions to his son. There's another stage. And then finally you have the old man alone who's bah humbugging the entire holiday. And there's, again, another aspect. So you're dealing with Halloween at different stages of your life and looking at it at different aspects of the holiday. Right. Yep. So we all have Halloween meaning different things to us. And it's, you know, like any good holiday, like one of the things that sucks about Thanksgiving, it's pretty much the same thing. You know, eat a lot of food, see family, and then maybe watch football. You know, that's it. You know, it's, you know, for Halloween, you have the candy, the costumes, the trick-or-treating, the party, the scariness, the scary movies, all these different things. You know, we have different attitudes towards it. And so, again, depending on which appeals to you the most and which story you identify with, I think, the most. And like I mentioned, Creepshow, almost every story in Creepshow is some sort of a revenge story or a, you know, delivering justice to the unjust story. Here, that's, you know, that's not really the case. Every story has a different center to it. They're not all making the same point again and again and again.
Right. Yeah.
Well, there was, though, Mike, a little bit of history here. There used to be a Thanksgiving ragamuffin parade, and it predated the Macy's Thanksgiving Day parade in New York. They think the practice of actually trick-or-treating at Halloween probably didn't really come into practice in this country until maybe like the 40s. The Ragamuffin Parade, does anybody want to know what that is? Just so I can...
Well, you already teased us.
I already teased
you.
Don't
hold out, bitch. Come on.
And Ragamuffin Day was also called Thanksgiving Day. And in New York City, children would dress themselves up in large oversized clothes that were too big for them, and they would paint their faces and do caricatures of beggars, basically hobos, things like that. They would go knocking on doors and ask anything for Thanksgiving. So they would beg for money, they'd get candy, sometimes they'd get apples, things like that. And then by the 1930s, that tradition started to fade out. So I don't know that much about the Ragamuffin Parade, but I do know that at least in this country, that may have been some of the very earliest beginnings of Halloween. And they do know that it dated all the way back to, at least they have evidence of it going on, I think, to like maybe 1870 or 1880. So they know that it was going on for a while. I'd have to do actual research to, like, learn more. But I heard about it in this book I was reading about Halloween traditions, like, a long time ago.
And so you're saying that's possibly where the Halloween today originates from, in a sense.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Or at least the type of celebration.
Or at least the trick-or-treating aspect.
Right.
Because the kids wouldn't go around on Halloween. Right. Halloween was a very different holiday before that. Well, that's my understanding of it anyway.
And this is an excellent segue, but related, which is this film, basically by the end of the film, whether good people die or not in the film, is the tradition of Halloween and people should never break it. In other words, it's a fun holiday. You should follow it to the end. And that's what Sam basically does at the end, right? I mean, that's what happens.
in the Brian Cox story, whereas he just wants his candy, you know, his trick or treat. He just wants the treat. And once he gets it, everybody's happy and move on. And then the opening sequence, which also is the end sequence, when the Leslie Bibb character is a humbug as well, the humbugs are the ones that get punished, the ones that don't want to do the trick-or-treating, the ones that...
Well, she blows, right, she blows out the lantern before midnight. Right, what were the four rules? Don't blow out your lantern before midnight.
Always check your candy.
Always check your candy.
Always give out candy and always wear a costume.
Costume.
Right. Yep. And that's what the Sam character represents, is basically a physical representation of those four rules, in a sense. And he, because, I mean, he's not evil, really, because if he gets his candy, he gets his candy, right? So, you know, the only spot I was curious about the Sam character, and basically what Sam is, you know, here's the spoiler, we'll just throw it up now. He's a little demon that looks like a boy because he's the size of a boy in a costume. He wears is like a scarecrow costume, but he's a demon underneath. And he just goes around to all the houses collecting candy like anybody, any little kid would. The only spot I was confused was when he appeared at the end of the school bus massacre. That, because that doesn't really have anything to do with the four rules. But,
he was just hanging out.
Yeah, so.
He was there. So he was watching, just like he watched the werewolf feast, he was watching the ghost children.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah, and
but I forgot
he was at the end of the werewolf one too, yeah.
He was also present at the original massacre though too. They show the bus go right by him.
Yes. That's true. That's true.
Yeah, okay.
So yeah. I think the comment there is that he is the embodiment of the spirit of Halloween and he's always sort of watching what's going on at all times.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, because I mean even in the wolf one, he just watches the wolves basically become werewolves and eat their victims and whatever. And he's ignored, and yet he also doesn't interject, whether positively or negatively, to it. So
he is the Santa Claus for Halloween, is basically what they're
yeah, the great pumpkin Charlie Brown.
Right.
Yeah.
Charlie Brown's an asshole. That's still one of my favorite lines in that movie.
Daddy! Oh, my God, that kid. Oh, my God, that kid.
Charlie Brown's an asshole!
Be quiet, Billy. Was it Billy? What was the kid's name?
Yeah, I think it was Billy.
Yeah, Billy. Yeah.
Quiet, Billy. Okay, Daddy! You know.
Now, Chrissy, you had me curious, and Mike, too, because and probably Eric as well, but I know me and Mike... We're definitely curious. Because I was curious, and Mike was actually saying, "Oh, you put me in suspense." What were these scenes in the Brian Cox story that disturbed you? Because I'm guessing maybe it was the jack-o'-lantern that lights on fire. Maybe I don't know. I'm just throwing stuff out.
Oh my gosh! I love all the writing on the wall.
Yeah, that was awesome.
That was really terrifying. One second it was there, the next second. One second it was not there, the next second it was.
Yeah, that anything moment, that has like this odd writing on the wall that's not really graffiti, but it's something that you see as a horror trope in a lot of horror films. It always freaks me out.
But it didn't have smell my feet. It had trick or treat, give me something good to eat, but it didn't have the trick or treat smell my feet. Didn't have smell my feet in there.
I think the smell my feet would actually have worked within the tone of this film.
Right.
It would have been creepy. It still would have been scary, even if it said smell my feet. It's because it was the way that it was done, the way that it was scrawled.
Yeah.
And it was clearly a demonic or supernatural thing that he was able to do that.
Right.
Because it was just everywhere. It wasn't like, you know, just once.
I think Phil had to appreciate one of the best uses of a little dog in a film.
Oh, the dog died in this film.
Well, no, but no, at the beginning of that segment where he's got the mask on the dog with the glowing eyes.
Awesome. Yeah, oh, yes.
Yeah.
And the other thing that bothered me that I couldn't get out of my head was when he's downstairs after Creed's has fallen down the stairs. with the gumballs and the glass and the candy. Yeah, and I guess he's going for the door to try to get out of the house. And they do a shot above him. So you're focused on Creed struggling to unlock the door, but you see, like, kind of out of the corner of your eye in the, at the top, that Sam is actually crawling on the ceiling.
Right. Yep.
Oh, wow.
That was really creeptastic. I was like, oh my God. And then you know he's going to fall on him. So you're just holding your breath.
But. Well, and I loved the reveal when he finally gets his mask off. Cause it's so weird. Cause first of all, the fact that this thing has pumpkin guts is awesome. He shoots it with a shotgun and pumpkin guts spray. That's such an awesome idea. I loved it. And also just the face that they put on this Sam creature. It's like, if it was just a pumpkin that looked like that sitting somewhere, it wouldn't be that bad. But the fact that it's on this living thing that's like trying to kill this guy.
Yeah.
It was so fucking creepy.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh God.
And then there's that moment where he does shoot it with the shotgun and you see a side shot. So you don't see, you just see Sam fly back against the wall, hit the wall, slide down and ka-thunk.
Right.
There was something very terrifying about that too. Because it was almost like, is it really over? Is it really over?
Well, you know it wasn't over.
Yeah. Oh, the hand. The hand.
And then,
oh,
awesome. And then the callback. Callback to one of the greatest lines in a horror movie ever. When Brian Cox looks over, sees the hand crawling off along the floor. Oh, and what does he say?
You gotta be fucking
kidding me. And Brian Cox was designed to look like John Carpenter.
And Mike, he tried on purpose to look like John Carpenter.
Yeah.
And Mike's referring to the movie The Thing.
Yep.
That's where the line's from. Yep. And then, I mean, also, the shot when, like, he shoots the head and it blows up and the pumpkin gush, you know, gets all over his face. But, obviously, you know, that was referring to like any horror film where someone gets shot in the head and blood gets splashed everywhere.
I wonder if it was warm.
It's a good question, Eric.
I thought it was cold.
Okay.
For some reason, I was like, I wonder, I just automatically thought it would be cold. Like a pumpkin. Well,
normal pumpkin guts are cold, but that thing was alive, so who knows?
That's true. That's weird. That's an interesting.
And I never even considered.
Well, and they do such a great job in that last segment, which is Meet Sam with sound. You know, you're hearing like the little pitter of the hands on the floor.
A little pitter patter.
Yeah, you hear the footsteps upstairs in the bedroom on the second floor. Yeah, they really do a fantastic job. That's why it was hard for me to pick my favorite. It's that one and the one about the ghost children.
And I love the design in that it's a child and he's wearing feety pajamas with the escape hatch.
Yes.
No,
and Christy, have you had a chance to watch this with the commentary?
I watched the commentary years ago when I got the DVD. I wanted to watch it again before this episode, but I didn't get a chance because it's my husband's DVD and I can't find it.
Okay.
So I ended up renting it on Amazon just so I could see it, you know. And then
something of note, if that was your favorite segment, is that at the very beginning of the movie when they're showing the couple taking down the Halloween decorations in the front yard,
yeah,
and there's that false scare where she looks across the street and sees the guy wearing a mask.
Yeah, I love that.
When on the first time you see that guy, it's very quick. You got to be paying attention to catch it. But the very first time you see that guy, walking behind him are the zombie children on their way back from the house.
Oh, yep. Wow. Yeah.
So it's just like little things like this. Michael Dougherty did that type of thing all throughout all of the segments to tie them all together. I think that's awesome.
So the kids from the bus are walking by.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. I'll have to watch
that and just really look for it. I know that we actually, the other thing though that was kind of nice about me not getting to see the commentary was that Nathan and I sat down and figured out what happened in terms of timeline without that helping us at all. Well, so that was really fun. It was fun to figure it out on our own.
That's why it's made so well, is because you can do that. And there are very specific moments where he tells you exactly what's going on in another storyline. Like, there's the moment where I think it's Krebs is watching the television and sees the news reporter from downtown, right, where you'd seen in the earlier segment, that's where the werewolf girls were hanging out. And right, you'd seen that reporter down there during that segment. So you're like, oh, while that was going on, this dude was here watching it on TV.
Oh, that's true. That's a good point, Eric. That is cool. Now, Chrissy, you mentioned something about the bus massacre that was, quote unquote, sad. What are you referring to?
Oh, when he takes the candy, the box of candy, the bus driver.
Yep. In the flashback.
Yep. And he takes the candy, and he's giving the kids their candy and checking the chains. And the little kids are just taking the candy. They have no idea.
Oh, what was going
to
happen?
What's going to happen to them? Except for the one in the Dracula costume who's like, "Go." What does he say? Go home, go home. I want to go home. He knows something is wrong.
Well, because they show as they're driving, he's counting the houses or reciting the house numbers.
Right.
He's like 324, 326, you know, it's going through. So this kid is probably autistic. Mm-hmm. He probably does this, you know, as autistic kids do, they get rituals. And he's probably doing this every day. And so he knows they did not go where they're supposed to go. And right, so he freaks out once they take the wrong turn off to the quarry. Yeah. And I got to tell you, the creepiest thing for me in this entire movie are the kids on the bus. Not when they're zombies, but their Halloween costumes. Mm-hmm. There's the one where the kid has the paper bag over his head, but it looks like he's got like an actual smile of human teeth. It's just
and one of the things he tells you in the commentary is that the costumes for those kids were inspired by actual pictures of kids with mental problems that designed their own Halloween costumes.
Oh, that's interesting.
Wow.
Now,
that's really unsettling.
Isn't it? Isn't it, though?
Holy crap. Yeah. Well, that's genius.
It is genius, actually. And it was probably from, you know, 1920 sanitarium, whatever, you know, something like that. Now, Chris, you mentioned the things that scared you the most of the film. My most frightful scene was a red herring, and it was already mentioned, which was when Leslie Bibb is taking down the Halloween decorations in her yard, and there's that guy in the mask just staring at her, and we think that he's the killer. And I was like, no way, that was awesome. And then, of course, it was just a red herring because he's getting picked up by his buddies. But I thought that was an effective, cheap scare.
And we're all watching him and missing the zombie children.
Right.
Well, to be honest, though, you guys probably didn't even notice the zombie children until
third watch, right? And you wouldn't unless you're looking for them, because it is very, very quick.
Yeah. So, believe it or not, that was the thing that scared me the most of the whole film. What about you guys?
Oh, it's Sam. Easy. Not even close. Uh-huh. That creepy little fucking dude. I wouldn't want him in my house.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, when he takes off the scarecrow mask and you see, it's like, holy shit, it's not even a kid. Right. What about you, Mike?
I already said it's the kids on the bus just creep me out. I think that whole segment, and I love, you know, when she's going down the elevator into the quarry and all you see are the three jack-o'-lanterns.
Oh, that was awesome scene, yeah.
And as she goes down, you know, obviously you're changing your angle and your perspective as the camera's moving. And supposedly it's from
her from Rhonda's and the boy, too. The boy's in a thing with her.
And the boy's with her. And so you're seeing it from Rhonda's point of view. And as, you know, so at one of the bars passes by one of the jack-o'-lanterns. But as the bar passes it, and it goes past the position of the jack-o'-lantern, it's not there anymore. So you don't see the jack-o'-lantern go out. It's just that it just sort of vanishes from your point of view.
Do you think that was a mistake in the filming and they just didn't notice it?
I think that's intentional, that the jack-o'-lantern goes out as intent, as a sign that, you know, something bad is happening, you know, and the idea that they're setting, well, we know afterwards that it's all a trick.
Yep.
That's
well, and I liked the Rhonda character because she clearly knows that she's different. She knows these, she's not the same as everybody else, and yet she still tries to fit in the best she could. Like there's a one scene where she's talking to the kid in the pirate costume, and she goes on for like 2 minutes straight about Samhain and the tradition of it. And blah, 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 blah. And then the people used to sacrifice the yada, yada. And the kid's just looking at her like, what the fuck? And then she stops and turns to him and goes, I like your eye patch.
Yeah.
And at the time this came out, I basically had that girl in my class.
Yeah.
She looked at like almost like maybe, cause this girl's probably like 11 or 12.
Uh-huh.
And I had her like 14-year-old version now where she actually is exceptionally shy, very withdrawn, really, really smart, constantly read.
Yeah.
But, you know, but that was that, like that girl. So there's some, and always been one of my favorite students. But, so I immediately had some affection for that character because she reminded me of this girl that I had.
Now, did you think that what she does at the end of the story where she sells them all up the creek, did you think that I felt that didn't fit her character?
Oh no! Fuck those assholes. Let them get eaten by zombies.
Really? Yeah. See, I had a bad taste at that. I could see that, but it didn't feel like it fit her character.
No, but in okay.
And my personal opinion is that they didn't deserve that fate anyway.
I'm not an expert at people that I mean they call her an idiot savant. Okay, but she probably is more likely has Asperger's, or what we know today is Asperger's. And I am no expert on Asperger's. I don't pretend to be an expert on Asperger's, but my niece has it. And I do know that one characteristic of not every single child that has it, but many that do, is they do not like, there's two things. They don't like injustice. And they can emotionally detach themselves.
Mm-hmm.
My sister said she had a problem with my niece. The reason she pulled my niece out of school was because my niece came home from school one day and started lighting her little ponies on fire.
Whoa.
And Missy said, oh, what are you doing, honey? And Andy said, oh, these are all the kids that picked on me today.
Yikes.
No, and didn't even think that it was, she just said, you know, they deserve it. They were mean to me. Didn't even think, hey, this is not a moral thing to do. This is not, now Andy was very young at the time. And of course, that's when Missy started to realize something's not right here. But it can be a characteristic of that particular condition. So when she sold them all up the creek, it made complete sense to me. I'm like, she's emotionally detached. They traumatized her. They upset her. As far as she's concerned, she's done. She's like, no, you deserve whatever you get, dude. I don't care if you burn to death. I'm out of here. Like, they can detach themselves.
Have fun.
Yep.
They also hurt her, right? Because she fell and smacked her head on a rock.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah,
But to be honest, though, only the lead girl or the lead of the group.
Yes, Angela, the bitch.
Yeah, she was the only one that was really...
She's the one that really deserved it. The pirate could have been given granted asylum, and so the other skinnier dude was nice to her towards the end as well. So I should let those two on the elevator and let the rest die.
But I could also see how she because that I mean isn't he the one that maybe was the greatest betrayal?
Yes, because he was pretending quote to like her. And yet he was a decent kid.
I think he did.
I don't think he was pretending. I think he did actually like her.
Yeah, but the fact that she is a pretty girl and you know, he could relate to her whether or not she had Asperger's or whatnot.
But doesn't that make it worse?
But you know what went out? They was you know he's the one that said, "Oh, we were just kidding. It was just a joke." Not, you know, but we.
Yeah, but you're looking at it as an adult. You're not looking at it from the point of view of an 11 or 12 year old girl who's probably been picked on every day for her life.
Let me rephrase. I don't think we're talking about whether or not that's the case. What I'm saying is, for me, how I watched it, it didn't fit the crime, that he died because he was a nice kid, as Chrissy said. And,
well, yeah, none of them actually deserved death. I'm just saying.
A little blonde bitch.
But it wouldn't be a Halloween story if it wouldn't be a revengeful ghost story of somebody that, you know, didn't die. Like, then where would be the fun in that? It's a Halloween story.
And and you know what? She gave them the jack-o'-lanterns and said, you know, they'd keep them safe. They put them
out. That's right. And they didn't listen to her. They kicked them out.
Actually, it was Angela that did it. She kicked them into the water and said, who cares? And because the other one girl said, I think we should probably not blow it out. And she just looks at her and just kicks it and basically saying, fuck you.
That's right.
Right.
So, but that gets that actually, it's a good point just because we're talking about that blowing out the candles. That does get into the ending where they broke their own rules. Because all
that,
of the.
Now, I thought I knew what you meant when you referred to this earlier. Why don't you expound on that?
Well, all of the ghost zombie children show up at Creed's house and say trick or treat. But the pumpkins are supposed,
still there.
But the pumpkins are all lit and they're still sitting there. So if the pumpkins were supposed to keep everybody safe, as long as it was lit, a spirit wouldn't come near you, which I can actually tell you where that comes from in a second, because it is a legitimate Halloween thing, or it is legitimate folklore. It goes back to ancient Ireland. So they broke their own rules because all of the lanterns were lit and there's the kids standing on the porch. Unless I missed it and the candles had all been, the jack-o'-lanterns had been blown out. But I don't think so. I think they were all lit. They were lit. So they broke their own rules. All they really needed to do was make sure those lights were out so that they didn't. Because when you set up rules, and Phil, you know this too, in speculative fiction and horror, we all know this because we all watch a lot of speculative fiction. Once you establish rules, you can't break them.
Right.
Unless you have a good rule for breaking them.
Right.
Because that's when things can get confusing and become a hot mess. Now, in this film, I don't necessarily think it's a huge crime.
Right.
But it just seems like they put so much effort into the rules, particularly since Sam Haines' character is all about the rules.
Right. And the first 2 minutes.
So it was
of the
even
movie.
More shocking to me that somebody didn't pay attention to that. Because I was like, this film is all about respect the rules, and then you go ahead and break this one rule. How come the zombie children can still get him?
That's a completely valid point, but I didn't notice it, nor did I particularly care.
No, most people wouldn't, but...
And I don't think... I think it's a valid point to raise. I could argue that if we want to like start nitpicking, I mean, it depends on who the rules apply to. The kids didn't have any special attachment to... the drowned children, whereas this is the person who wronged them. This is the person who killed them.
That's true.
So I don't know if there's a loophole, if there's like clause 6 subsection C.
the revenge clause.
Yeah,
the revenge clause.
I just got a mental picture of Crowley in Supernatural rolling out his terms and conditions on a scroll.
There you go. So, I get it. It would be nice if they had. It would be nicer if that had been addressed. But it's not going to bother me. Certainly not to the point of spoiling the film or anything for me.
Well, no, I just noticed it for that reason.
Right.
But the legend of the jack-o'-lantern too is it came over from Ireland and. There was an Irish guy who trades his soul to the devil for one last drink. I swear to God, this is really
like
the story.
Right? That would be my Uncle Tommy.
Yeah. The devil comes back in 10 years to claim Jack's soul, and Jack tricks him. I forget what he does. He chases him up a tree and then does something to the tree so the devil can't come down, something like that. And... the devil's angry, so lets him go. Right. So when Jack finally does die, the devil won't let him into hell because the devil is still mad at him for having been tricked.
Wait, not being let into hell is a punishment?
Well, but wait, it gets better.
Okay.
The devil was outsmarted by a drunken Irishman. I mean, yeah. Why are we ever scared of this guy?
All right. So instead, he banishes him. He can't get into heaven. He can't go to hell. And instead, Jack has to wander the earth for eternity. But Jack doesn't want to wander around in the dark. So he cuts into a turnip and sticks a candle into it and makes a lantern.
A turnip?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Originally was a turnip.
Yeah, I actually heard this story.
When the Irish came over here, I guess we didn't have gigantic turnips or whatever it was they needed. So they used pumpkins instead. But it is held that a lit jack-o'-lantern, just like a gargoyle or just like a bagua mirror or just like a horseshoe over the barn door.
I think you got something stuck in your throat.
I'm with Eric in this. What was this bum guam? What?
There's a mirror. It's a specific kind of mirror in Chinese traditions, and you hang it in your foyer, and evil spirits cannot come into the house as long as this mirror is hanging there.
Okay. I like how she just drops that like everybody knows what it is.
How about you guys? At this point, she throws out so many of these things. I'm starting to think she makes all this shit up on the fly.
I do not make all this shit up.
Yeah, it's a Chinese tradition. No. Yeah, that's it. That's the ticket.
Now,
yeah, but my husband was always really into feng shui. So that's why I know that. But anyway, there's also something in the Jewish faith that you put on your door. But really, it's just, think about it. Even in our own superstitions, we, put a horseshoe over the door. It keeps the bad spirits away. That's what gargoyles are supposed to do.
Yeah, right now.
So the jack-o'-lantern is supposed to keep bad spirits away. So they played with that original idea in this film. And I think that's why it kind of even bothered me more at the end when everything was lit. I was like, oh, dude, but now you're ruining centuries of superstition on top of it. What the fuck?
Now, why is it a pumpkin and not a hubbard squash? They could have used hubbard squashes and made jack-o'-lanterns.
Phil, I think we need to get a committee together right now and be like, down with the pumpkin. It needs to be a hubbard squash. Whatever that thing is you said.
Because we're fucking Americans. We don't do fucking squashes.
Well, a pumpkin is a squash, actually.
Don't tell him, Phil.
Oh, sorry.
A jack o' squash actually sounds kind of dirty, though, doesn't it?
Like, you sound very enthusiastic about that.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Oh, peach fuzz. You really aren't squashes like long and skinny and sort of phallic. It doesn't really make a whole lot of sense.
Well, hubbard squashes just look like giant pumpkins, but they're blue. Or green.
They're blue.
Yeah, they're blue. They're like a cyan.
Or
something like that. Yeah.
Actually, those sound really cool.
Yeah, yeah. Google hubbard squash.
All right, I'm going to do that next.
Yeah. Chance. Let's talk about some of the other stories. Let's talk about the principal story, and then we'll talk about the Anna Paquin story, and then we can talk about the opening and the ending and stuff as well as. So the principal story, Eric, you said that one you liked the least, though you liked the ending, which was a cool reveal, but I assume the quote-unquote humor, or maybe it was the meanness of it, maybe, that you disliked. What was it?
It wasn't that I disliked it, it's like that I liked it less than the rest of them.
Well, that's fair, yeah. I mean, they're all good stories, but yeah, go on.
It was mainly the kids. Because I don't like kids. So I didn't like the little
fat fucker. That's why I
liked
this one.
I didn't like the little fat fucker that he killed, and I didn't like his obnoxious redheaded little child. That's all. Mm-hmm. Although I did find humor in when he was trying to bury him in the backyard, the neighbor came out. That was kind of funny.
There was. I was actually surprised when I first saw this one, too, that he was actually killing the boy. And
there's another, kid buried, though.
Yeah, I saw that.
That we never, ever get an answer to, do we?
No, I think the guy's just a serial killer, and he just
kills. Oh, he's definitely a serial killer. Absolutely.
Yeah. And this just happened to be the next one that came in, you know?
Well, and that's what I like about this is, well, first of all, the cathartic thing of having the principal murdering his own students.
Right.
And this is the kid he kills, you know, and is he's almost doing Sam's work as in his own way, right? Because he's right. Breaking the jack-o'-lanterns, he's stealing candy.
Yeah.
He's the asshole on Halloween. And so we don't care that he's killed, because he fucking deserved it, because he's stealing the fucking candy. And breaking people's jack-o'-lanterns.
Right.
But it's the idea that here's this serial killer who is bedeviled by his own 4-year-old child or 5-year-old child. It's one thing when a child is supposed to be like cute and sweet and you just find him annoying. This child is clearly supposed to be an obnoxious little brat.
Right.
Charlie Brown's an asshole, right? That's Daddy. Oh, and the comic timing of the burial is so good, and Dylan Baker's performance is so good in that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so yeah, so I really like that segment for that reason, for the humor and for the black humor, and down to don't forget the eyes. You're gonna help me with the eyes. You know,
and that means more than what we find out, right?
Although I don't understand how did he chop the head off after he dumped the kid in the grave?
They didn't show us.
Yeah, I mean, they had to, because the kid was still alive.
Or maybe
no, I thought that was maybe the other kid that was underneath.
Yeah, that was the other kid that was underneath, maybe, yeah.
Oh, maybe. Okay. You know, and this also has some laying the seeds. Obviously, you have the thing with Mr. Creed next door, and that little crossover, and that could stand completely on its own. And if you had to walk out of the movie and never saw Creed's story, there would be nothing all that unusual except for the scene where he gets tackled,
right?
Yeah,
where he sees that. Yeah. But but it's that nice little perversion about Halloween, and it sets up, you know, that he's got a date. Right, Daddy's got a date. Right, he mentions that at some point, doesn't he?
That's the girl that he kills, the one he bites her neck.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, and I enjoyed the kid because he was supposed to be an asshole.
See, I didn't like the kid because he was an asshole.
Well, and also once again in this story, they're playing with Halloween urban legends or Halloween superstitions, the whole thing about the poisoned candy.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Like I remember the year the Tylenol murders happened.
Oh, Jesus, that was intense.
The Tylenol capsules were laced with cyanide and there was a bunch of deaths. And I think it was 1982 and it happened like a month before Halloween. I was 11.
Oh, yeah, and all the kids were upset because we knew we weren't getting any Tylenol when we came trick-or-treating.
No, but I remember my parents and parents of my friends, this really, they were hyper.
Freaked them the fuck out.
That year. They were all about checking the Halloween candy and make sure it doesn't have razor blades.
That's when all the seals went on bottles. Bottles did not have seals before that happened.
That's right. And I don't know that my father would have seen like a dusting of cyanide or something on the candy. But I remember that had a huge impact on our friends that Halloween. And to this day, I don't eat unwrapped candy. If it falls out of a bag, I just go throw it away. But poisoned candy has actually never really happened.
Right, right. That's one of those
urban legends. It's a total urban legend. So I love the way they took – well, I think there was one, but it turned out it was the father who had taken out a life insurance policy or something on his 8-year-old son and decided to fill his pixie stick with cyanide.
Talk about a horror show.
Yeah. Jesus. My God. But I think that was, and there maybe was one other one, but I think in that other case, it turned out to be the parents also.
Yay, parents.
Yeah, no, the moral of the story is don't eat the candy your parents give you.
Yes.
Trust the strangers.
Don't trust the parents, kids.
Take candy from strangers.
The moral is don't have kids if you're going to kill them.
There you go. Don't have kids. There you go.
Hey, Phil, listen, I've been thinking I want to murder some kids lately, so I'm going to pop out a couple so I can do that and see what it feels like. So exciting.
Well, you know, you made it. You should be allowed to break it.
Make your own.
But yeah, I did really enjoy that they played with that whole idea. And there's a couple of other things, urban legends they play with too. But anyway.
Right, right. And actually that has two instances where that character appears in two other stories, right? He appears in this part of the story, I guess the werewolf story, because that's obviously where his fate happens. But he also appears earlier in the werewolf story in one of their cut scenes where he basically pretends he's a vampire, I guess, right?
Right.
He's not really a vampire. He's just
pretending.
Puts an appliance in his mouth.
Yeah, yeah. And
you take it at the end.
Yeah, yeah, I saw that too. So I was confused at first. I go, how the hell did he kill with one of them plastic teeth? But maybe it's not plastic. It's probably something else.
Well, maybe he filed his teeth.
No, they show him taking it off. Anna Paquin takes it off of him.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's not Sarah Paquin. It's just one of the random.
It's the black girl. Snow White.
Yeah, exactly. Let's see what else. So the werewolf story. The werewolf story. So, Eric, you knew they were werewolves right from the beginning?
No.
Okay.
Not the first time I watched the movie, but if you watch it again, they're not subtle. they're telling you the entire time that these girls are werewolves. It starts in the dressing room when she says, "Come on out, or we're gonna huff and puff."
Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So there's little references. And Chrissy mentions, too, about the wolf. I mean, the moon, too. But what were you saying, Mike?
But see, that's what I like about it, is that you say it's not subtle, and yet it goes way over your head until you watch, and then you go, oh, it's so obvious. Yeah, but then you didn't catch it first time, did you, asshole? No, you didn't. So it's not fucking obvious. Okay, but she's also dressed as Little Red Riding Hood. So the wolf comment... Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, it kind of plays in with the big bad wolf. So, you know, there's a little bit of cover that they get from themselves there.
All of their costumes have something to do with wolves or sheep or virginity.
Well, and they also make comments about, like, when she's in the dressing room talking about she ate a little bad Mexican. She's not talking about Taco Bell.
Yeah. But, I mean, even... Little Red Riding Hood obviously has the whole thing where it's Lori, right? Lori is the one who needs to lose her virginity or whatever. Yep. And the fairy tale of Little Red Riding Hood, I mean, briefly, it's about a girl. Really underneath, it's about the loss of virginity, if you think about it. Because her grandmother becomes a wolf, and the great wolf that is her own adulthood is now going to consume her.
Because how the fuck did you lose your virginity?
Oh, man, it was piranhas and a Diet Coke on a beach in Antarctica. That was awesome.
I'm like, where the fuck does your grandma come in with losing virginity? I don't understand.
Well, no, it was because the grandmother was taking care of Little Red Riding Hood. So now this wolf comes in, and the wolf represents the world of men. All right, never mind.
I'm sorry.
Should I talk about the Scottish Cinderella story where all the sheep lose their tails and it's
can't breathe yet.
It's all like very phallic. I'm sure you guys would enjoy that story too.
Oh. Oh my god.
But okay. Whether we're going to have me silly like Mike and Eric or serious, like Chrissy.
She started it.
The point is that the Little Red Riding Hood is attacked by a wolf that replaces her grandmother in the story. So that's obviously one quote unquote foreshadowing of these girls are werewolves. The other three, one was Little Bo Peep.
Little Bo Peep has something to do with sheep. But
it was that. Well, not just sheep, but also a wolf.
Was there a wolf in that story too?
Yeah, she's supposed to protect the sheep from a wolf or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's right. But in the she's the one who finds that the tails of the sheep are all bloody stumps. And then she goes and finds the tails later.
So they were circumcised.
On the branches. Oh.
Oh, good Lord. No, no, they were Gentiles, so they weren't circumcised. So, what about the other two? I forget what the other two were dressed as.
It was Snow White, Bo Peep, Cinderella, and Little Red Riding Hood.
No, but Snow White. I don't think it was Snow White.
Yeah, Cinderella. There's a pumpkin involved, so kind of get that. But
are you sure the black girl was Snow White? There was two black girls, I swear. One that we don't meet except at the party, and then the one that hangs out with them the whole time. Was the one that hung up with them the whole time, was she Snow White?
Snow White. Yeah.
Yeah, she was Snow White.
Oh, all right. See,
well, the Snow White tie-in could, again, be some kind of reference to virginity or the fairest in the land. She was the most, you know.
Cinderella. What about Cinderella?
Well, there are many versions of the Cinderella story other than the classic one that we think of.
Yeah, from Disney.
And there is a Cinderella story, I think it's out of Scotland, that has something to do with a sheep and a wolf, if I remember. I mean, I haven't read these since I was like maybe 14, but I'm pretty sure it's some sort of Cinderella. It's like a version of Cinderella. So I don't know if they were reaching that far. Maybe I'm overthinking this whole thing. But it just seems to me, if Little Red Riding Hood and Little Bo Peep, plus they're going to Sheep's Meadow for the party. That's where the party's being held. So obviously they were really trying to say something with these costumes. So that's why I was sort of going, well, there must be Snow White and Cinderella connection somewhere to something. Because
right, so we're not.
Or Cinderella's going to turn back into a maiden she won't be a princess anymore at midnight. It could have something to do with that because she transforms into a werewolf. So I'm sure there's tie-ins in all four of those costumes. We just haven't figured them out yet.
Right. So. I mean, obviously, Mike mentioned Halloween is what it is to a person based off of their generation or their age, more than even generation. And in the Mean Girls, the Lindsay Lohan film, there's a scene where she goes, it's the one night a year that all the girls can dress like tramps. And here, these girls dress in all these Disney princess costumes that are very
slutty princesses.
Yeah, pretty much. Exactly. And then the main thing is, the virginity point, the joke of the whole episode or segment is that the Anna Paquin character who plays Little Red Riding Hood is supposed to lose her virginity that night. And then we find out at the end, the virginity doesn't mean sex. It means eating the sheep, in a sense. And the sheep are all the victims, which are basically the men, in a sense, that they snooker into coming to the party because, there's these hot chicks, and then they all get eaten.
And our friendly neighborhood principal serial killer.
Indeed. Yet it all ties back because he said to his son, I have a date tonight.
Right.
And so forth.
Right.
So,
sorry, Christy.
No, I was just going to say, we do hear the wolves howling in the middle of the kid's story when they're at the quarry.
Yes, yes, that's true.
So anyway, go ahead, Mike, sorry.
Right, because at this point, if you've never seen it before, this is when you're starting to recognize that there's little bits where it ties in. And especially since the kid's storyline stands out so much on its own, you know, that you don't, until you see little things like you said, the howling. And the girl says, werewolves?
Yeah.
And everyone laughs at her. And I said, but so that for me, this is like the big point in the film where you realize just how connected everything is. Right? This is sort of the, all right, we're taking the major character from story one, and he's been the serial killer in story two, and now he's the victim. You know, and story three, rather. So It was sort of like, oh, this is where like the scale to how much they're doing it, I think, really pays off.
Right.
Now the serial killer guy, did he break one of the four rules, or did he just have bad luck and land up with werewolves?
Question.
Because, I think it's just bad luck.
It could be too. Yeah, you're right. It could just be bad luck.
It doesn't say you're not allowed to poison candy. It tells you to check your candy. which implies to me that somebody has to be keeping you honest.
Right. That's true. Yeah.
So he is giving out. He is giving out candy.
Yeah. He has. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
He was looking for a helpless girl, and he found a werewolf. Oops.
Yeah, and he gave trick or treats to Sam. Right. He gave candy to Sam.
Yeah.
Yes, he did give candy to Sam.
Yeah, he did.
Well, but he also kills the girl at the parade.
That's right.
And he runs into the robot people, the robot girl from the opening.
Yeah, right.
Because he runs into her like on his way home, or she's begging the robot girl to help her or something. Isn't that it? Right. Yeah.
Oh, actually, he runs into her when he's going after the Paquin, because wasn't Paquin at that event? And he sees Paquin and obviously must have saw her and begins to follow her.
Yep.
Because that's his next victim after the girl that...
Attempted victim.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
So he, in a typical classic Halloween revenge story, gets his comeuppance at the end as well.
Mm-hmm. Sure does.
Yeah, that's true.
That would be what they call irony.
Right?
Right.
Yeah, so I do love that. I mean, it was cheesy as hell, but I do love that moment at the end where Anna Paquin just looks at him and says, "What big eyes you have." It's just like, yeah.
That's the reason why that was the best story, at least in my opinion. I thought it was fantastic.
Phil would love to get done by a sexy werewolf.
Oh, my God. I would have been riding
costume.
I would have been ripped to shreds with no problems. I would have
trick or treat, Phil.
Have you talked to your wife about this by any chance?
Well, this is prior to being married. So back in that age, you know. Let's see. What else? What other story did we miss? Did we miss anything else? The Leslie
there's a wraparound story, but there's not much to say there.
The only thing she did wrong was basically just be a humbug, right?
And no, she wasn't a bad person. She just blew out the jack-o'-lantern.
Right.
Well, she was
only even give her hubby some nookie, so.
Right.
Well, she didn't want to. She wanted to stay outside and take down all of the Halloween decorations, and
afterwards.
But she agreed. She agreed. She said, okay, put in the movie, meaning.
Yeah, she went, just go put on the tape.
And she was wearing her sexy sweatpants.
Actually, Mike, that was the second. There was nudity in that, too. They showed the porno, the girl.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. For some reason, I wasn't thinking about movies within the movie having nudity. I do want to point out, in the wraparound segment, it's interesting because the Creed character, who we already know has murdered children.
Yep.
And we know he's an ornery bastard.
Yep.
I do, by the way, love the set decoration because notice he's got all old shit in his house. So he's even got like a Victrola, right? He's got the old TV with the clicker.
Oh, yeah.
Not a regular remote, an actual clicker remote.
There's no doubt, you know.
And so, so he comes out, he gives the kids the candy.
Well, and I thought he was like Scrooge in Charles Dickens' A Christmas Tale, he's a good guy now, but we found out he really wasn't.
Well, right, because what happens is he finds, is that he looks, he sees Sam, and they sort of give Sam like a, hey, we're good now, right? I found the spirit. You know, sort of like a Charles Dickens thing. I'm, you know, a yay Halloween.
And technically, and it's true. Sam has no issues with him anymore.
Yeah, God bless us, everyone.
It's the zombie kids.
And then he looks, and he sees Sam, looks at his neighbors across the street, sees her pulling down the decorations, and he kind of shrugs his shoulders. He's like, well, she's fucked.
Right.
You don't need, he doesn't go in and he's, oh, hey, lady! Was it Emma? Look out for the midget! Nope. So, yeah, he's still an asshole. He doesn't seem to take any issue with that. But yeah, and that's sort of what brings us all back full circle.
Yeah, because the first scene, we find out that the girl, the person that has the wagon is the, I guess, the
Rhonda.
Rhonda the Asperger girl. We find out that the car that almost hits her is the college chicks. And then we find out that, and there was a few others too. Like you said, you saw the zombie kids walking by, and we didn't notice that at the beginning. And so it basically just all ties together at the end. And then they also show the little boy giving out candy, yet his father hasn't returned because he was killed by the werewolves.
Right.
Right.
And he'll grow up to be a serial killer in his own right.
Well, he already was.
Sure, right? That's
because
true.
He already was because he was chopping.
That'll be the sequel.
Carbon eyeballs.
Well, and there is a trick or treat two coming. Is there really? After he's done with Krampus. Huh. And he said that basically that's what's been holding it up is just getting Krampus finished.
Right.
Gotcha.
And it all comes back to a cartoon that he drew because it's on the disc and there's a commentary with
there's
it.
There's great special features on this disc, by the way.
This is definitely one worth owning. I remember.
Which one is it? Is it a Blu-ray or is it just a regular disc?
It's a Blu-ray.
Okay. See, I have the DVD and the DVD. All it has is the original cartoon and a commentary with the cartoon, and I think maybe a commentary with the film, and that's it. It has nothing else with it.
Oh, the Blu-ray has a whole history of Samhain feature on it.
Oh, geez. See, my disc doesn't have that. Bummer. No.
Well, this is one of those things you could probably get for $5 at the bargain bin in Walmart now.
Yeah, the Blu-ray, yeah. You're probably right. Yeah, and this is a film that would be good to upgrade anyway, especially if it has all those features. But either way, he drew a cartoon. I guess he was an animator prior to all meeting Bryan Singer. And he made a cartoon of Sam, basically. And it was originally played on MTV or something. And he said barely anybody saw it or whatever. But that's where he got the idea to make Sam the character in the feature-length film. Was from his original short animation film from 10 years prior. And so that was interesting.
Another little piece of trivia is that when the werewolves are in the dressing rooms getting ready and there's that little boy peeking in on them, that little boy is Sam. That little boy is the same actor that played Sam.
He's the real actor that played Sam.
Yeah. Quinn Lord.
Uh-huh.
Oh, that's cool. What was that?
Because Michael Dougherty was saying that the little kid did such a great job, he thought he deserved to have his face shown on the screen.
Yeah, a cameo somewhere else. And what were you going to say,
man? I said the kid's name is Quinn Lord, and I know that because he does a bumper for Bloody Good Horror. Okay, so if you listen to Bloody Good Horror, it's like, this is Quinn Lord from Trick or Treat, and you're listening to Bloody Good Horror, or something like that.
Gotcha.
So for some reason, that's the only reason I know that his name is Quinn Lord. And he's probably now like 6'10" and 240 pounds. And if he plays Sam again, it's going to be a completely different story.
Any further things anybody want to say about Mr. Dougherty's Trick or Treat?
You can get it on Blu-ray for $9.99 on Amazon right now.
That's not bad, especially with all the features.
Mm-hmm. Has audio commentary. It has Trick or Treat, The Lore and Legends of Halloween, the 28-minute feature. Additional scenes with optional commentary. Trick or Treat Season's Greetings, animated short with optional commentary. And bonus school bus effects comparison. They actually did, there were a combination of digital and practical effects they used to get the shot of the school bus going into the quarry. And that's what that is.
Nice.
Well, they didn't really kill the kids?
No, they didn't actually kill the kids. Aww.
Well, that's another thing that's really good about this film is that the special effects are really good looking. Whether they're CGI or they're practical, it's all well done. Mm-hmm. There's nothing that says, you can tell that's fake.
Yeah, they're going to hold up.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, if there's any CGI, it's really well hidden CGI, right? They're not CGI werewolves. It's not CGI Sam. Mm-hmm. It's probably done for like wire removal or backdrops or something.
And Christy summed it up perfectly, which is these are special effects that will hold up. They'll age fine.
trick or
anybody
treat.
Want to take a stab at telling us stuff in order?
You mean the order of the stories?
Yeah.
I'll give it a shot.
Okay.
So the wraparound happens...
Is last.
Last.
Very last.
Because you see the zombie kids walking away from the house. And so, therefore, the Sam one is previous to that. And that's happening at the same time that the werewolf party is going down. So that hasn't happened yet.
No,
and we see the neighbor...
No. The werewolf party is happening later.
I misspoke when I said werewolf party. I meant the party downtown where the werewolf chicks were.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's true.
Where the reporter was.
Yeah, because that's he's watching the reporter. Yeah, that's right.
That's what I meant.
And
I
also
that.
At the same time is the principal burying the kid.
Right.
Yeah.
And then the principal also looks over and sees him getting attacked by Sam. And just doesn't care.
So which comes first out of the children going to the bus versus the werewolf party?
No,
they're happening at the same time because the werewolves are howling in the distance. Yeah.
I think Wilkins kills the fat kid first.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And is carving up the head while Creeds is getting attacked by Sam.
Right.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Then I think Wilkins leaves for the parade.
Yep.
And he bumps into Robot Girl as he's coming
home. Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, the quarry.
The girls buying the Halloween costumes, I think, comes first.
Yep.
That's earlier in the night. Then we go to the principal, who's returning from shopping.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then you go through the principal's story, which runs concurrently with Creed's story. Then you have him go off after the carving of the pumpkin to start killing people dressed up as the vampire.
Mm-hmm.
Gets taken by the werewolves. The werewolves howl. We hear that while they're down in the quarry or heading down towards the quarry. So there's where that story fits in.
Right. And then I think the end of the regular film, not including the wraparound, would be when the Rhonda is coming out of the court. And then from there, there's a flash forward all the way to the wraparound story, is my guess.
Yeah, and notice that the girls don't tie in at all with the ending. All the other stories are there at the end.
No, that's not true. The girls are the ones that almost run over Rhonda.
When Rhonda's running away with the lit jack-o'-lantern in her thing.
In her wagon. Okay, yeah. So right, all of them come in. So you have the bratty Billy handing out candy. What's-his-face killed by the zombie children. The zombie children, obviously part of that story. Rhonda the retard almost gets run over by the werewolf girls. And then Sam kills off our robot. Chago.
Right. I would just want to change one thing that Mike stated, which is... Rhonda, disabled child. Not.
That's what they call her, Mike. Phil, that's what they call her in the movie.
Yeah, that's true.
That's her nickname in the film. That's what the other kids tease her.
Call her that. You got to say it right. It's retarded, right, Phil?
Retarded. That's right. And I think it was only Angela that said it. We would all agree. Doesn't have much standing.
Yeah, well, she's got it.
We all know that Angela is dressed like an angel for a reason.
Right. She's added.
Don't ever mistake in children for angels.
Oh, yeah. Well, shit. You know, Phil, if that she had lived, she was going to grow up to be what's her face from Final Girls, right? The Chanel. You know, that's.
I haven't seen that one yet. Final Girls.
Yeah, but you. You have not Final Girls. Scream Queens.
Oh right, yeah, that's a good point.
Right, she would grow up to be that bitchy sorority queen.
It's possible. Sometimes people grow up and become normal, but yes, that's possible.
No, she would be. Oh, what the hell is Chris from Carrie?
Yeah.
All right, so that's Trick or Treat, 2007
released at festival circuits, but yeah, 2009 probably, or 2010, somewhere around there, for disc or basically for everybody. Pretty much, it's widely loved by genre fans, to the point of like the cult following is like huge. Mike, is it one of those type of movies that you would see people wearing the t-shirt?
Yeah, and matter of fact, this week Fright Rags has revealed their Trick or Treat collection, and there's like four nice. Different Trick or Treat designs, including one of which is
the werewolves.
I don't think they have the werewolf. I think there's one which is the candy bar that I can't remember what the brand of the candy bar was. There's one which is Sam. Name
of one of their staff members.
Was that it? So
they named the candy bar after a staff member because they couldn't use a brand name.
All right, so there's a box set that's a Trick or Treat of Sam that comes with a Sam mask. It's like a plastic mask of Sam's demon face.
But what are the four t-shirts? One's the candy bar, one's probably Sam.
Right? One is the candy bar, Hottie Ho, or Holly Ho. So it's the candy bar with the razor blade in it. It's all Sam. Here you go. So it's a Trick or Treat limited edition mask and t-shirt. I think those are mostly sold out. Sam sitting on the porch surrounded by jack-o'-lanterns. The Holly Ho candy bar with the razor blade. There's one that's just a picture of Sam like as an advertisement. Sam face with the two suckers, also available as a baseball tee. And then Sam, the sucker, right, the ones that's bit that he uses to stab. Emma, they have sucker socks.
Nice.
So socks with the sucker on them. So those are the selections that they have. And this has sold really well because I know there's a lot of this stuff. The box set, there's the medium, large, extra large is all that's left. Everything else is gone. And this is all still pre-order. I think it starts tomorrow is when it's official.
Gotcha. It demonstrates that this is a well loved film by at least genre fans. Whether your next door neighbor would even know this film existed, who knows? But at least genre fans.
The Jaws stuff didn't sell this well. I mean, their Jaws stuff. I think their Jaws box set is still going. Is still available.
There were
some pretty nice designs for that. So anyway. Yeah, so this has really gotten a very big cult following. And I can almost see this becoming sort of like A Christmas Story is for Christmas. Because A Christmas Story was a flop when it came out.
Yep, by Bob Clark, or I think that's the name. Bob Clark, the same guy that did Black Christmas, as a matter of fact.
Right, and then just what happened is because of copyright issues, they couldn't show It's a Wonderful Life around the clock anymore. And so they just dug out, A Christmas Story because it was something they had the rights to. And they aired it around the clock on TBS and, suddenly it became a tradition.
Yep.
And while I don't think you could do that necessarily with this film because it's R-rated, I could certainly see how
Home
this
Alone
went.
Home Alone is another one. Too.
Well, Home Alone was at least a huge hit when it first came out.
I see what you're saying. Right. So this
I can
one
see
here,
how this could become.
This is an R-rated, it may not be able to get as much of a cult following. Or a following for the mainstream.
Right. But I think it will become a big thing for Halloween. I imagine in 20 years, people will be, this will be a tradition for a lot of people is watching
especially if the second one comes out and does well, and especially if it even makes it to the theaters and does well, then I could see this one even becoming even bigger. Very well. So I guess we can wrap it up. Trick or Treat has pretty much become, as Mike said, a staple for fans of genre films every Halloween. I know specifically Eric, it has for you. So, all right. So with that stated, Eric, why don't you leave us out?
All right. Thanks for tuning in tonight. Listen to us talk about the modern Halloween classic Trick or Treat. Come back next week. We'll have a different topic.